Get your fix of the Uncommon Cast Director Cure for the Common Writer Show. Join us as we discuss the bravest of all the fighters and those Heisei guys, too. With burning justice in our souls, let's tear it up!
I'm Aleph.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Sono.
Everything we say now is not the opinion of Ahmet or the Toe Network, it is solely the opinion of ourselves. But that doesn't mean it'll be any, you know, quality.
All of my opinions are quality. That's why I get in fights.
Yeah, because I was going to say, because if anyone disagrees with you, then you punch them in the face. But
I don't know, people seem to think my opinions are quality.
I'm just imagining Sono, just like bloody knuckles standing over someone like, say something bad about Bokenger! Say it again! Yeah! That's what I thought!
It was really funny, one of my friends watched Bokenger and was having a hard time getting into it, and she's like, I don't want to talk to you about this because I don't like Akashi, and I'm like, it's okay. It's okay, honey, you don't
well, you
need,
can be
it's
wrong.
Okay.
It's cool. We're all wrong about some things.
I imagine it's like Samuel L. Jackson Pulp Fiction. Say that again!
Apparently people are really intimidated by me over this, and I don't really understand it. Not just Bokenger specifically. But,
no, sorry, I'm joking.
Like, people would legitimately think, like, they are intimidated by not having the same opinions on things as me, and that they can't talk to me because of that, and I'm like, no.
No, look, we're critical-minded people. We like getting into these discussions.
Yes, that's true.
Bring things up with me. Bring up to me every reason you don't like Akashi. I want to know, because this will broaden my opinion of this character. I want to explore these traits that I'm apparently not seeing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's you know, it's story structure in general. Like, this is, like, I don't connect to people as much as I do to, like, what I can see of an entire tapestry, which is hence my previously rambled about love for feeling like there's a thesis statement that I can identify. Because, like, I dig on Shinosuke. I like Kiriko. I think some of the people back at the police station are fun. I don't know where this...
And they're getting better, actually.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They are.
Slowly.
But I don't know where the show is going, and not feeling as if I have a handle on where we're going, I get kind of snippy.
That definitely is something that makes sense. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's the different kinds of engagement people have.
Yeah, no, I'm very, very character-driven, and I can temporarily forgive story issues, in something ongoing like this. Like, at the end of something, I won't be able to, but in something ongoing like this, I'm like, I'm willing to give you the benefit of the doubt that this could still go somewhere, because I'm completely engaged in, like, this dork over here who's... only vaguely relevant to the plot.
Yeah. But you kind of forget, you're kind of more willing to forgive, because if you're engaged, you tend to be more willing to forgive things, I tend to find.
Yeah.
With shows, you're kind of like, okay, I'll give you a pass on that, because this is still entertaining to me, whereas I've often come across some things where I'm like, I would love to be engaged with this, but there's this massive wrench that I can't get round, because you're just taking too many liberties with character or plot or whatever.
And, I mean, that's... My relationship with Kiva and my relationship with Gaim are very much in that, where I was so engaged with Wataru that I was willing to forgive 80% of the things in Kiva. Not all of them. Things in Kiva that are completely terrible.
They are.
I've only seen 5 episodes of Kiva, and I can kind of understand what you mean.
Yeah. Like, it's just...
But, like, I was so engaged with him that I was willing to pretty much roll with things... But there was just no one in Gaim that I liked.
No. That's...
It's
there,
a hard,
there
it
were,
is
Actually,
a hard
there
sell.
Were 3 people in Gaim that I liked, but
who
they
got
were,
zero screen
they
time.
Were so minor that it didn't count. But I didn't care about any of the main characters.
See, the thing with Gaim was that there were characters I liked, but they weren't the same people by the end of the season that I liked originally. And you kind of get to the
that's
point where you're just like,
true.
Well... You know, you start off with the show and you have some characters. No, I like Mai. I liked Kaito originally. Yeah. You know, I liked Kota. I even liked Takatora to a degree. You know, there was definitely, he wasn't a complete
off not liking Takatora, and at the time I left, I had really started warming up to him. I was really coming around on him, because he was doing the whole, oh no, maybe I'm not going in the right direction with this. Maybe I'm making a terrible mistake.
I think they pulled
mistake.
It too late. I think they pulled that one too late for me. Well, that should have pulled in earlier for me.
It was fine when it happened, but the fact that he immediately went and like threw the Yuya footage at Kota for absolutely no reason. I'm like, nope, that's it. You lost me. I'm done. I quit.
Yeah.
And they're just
I quit this show.
It just kind of this is the thing, like, and they just seem to do these things to make these characters like consistently worse, and I was like, the problem is you have good characters here, the core of these characters kind of makes sense, but you're just twisting them in this horrible way that makes them completely unlikable as people, and you ruin all of their best traits completely.
And it's, I think the thing that got me the most is, yes, they did all that, and it was never in the service of anything interesting. It was always just like grimdark tryhard.
Yeah, it was so contrived. It was so contrived as well. Like, a lot of it was so contrived. I was just like, what are you doing?
Again, there was literally no reason for Takatora to show Kota the Yuya footage at that moment other than to be like, I feel like being
to
a
be
complete
like a
jerk to you right now.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
To use mild words.
I want to destroy him, and the knowledge of what he has done will destroy him. And it's like, dude, just shoot him in the head.
Like 30 seconds before, Takatora was like, I'm not going about this the right way, and like he seems to be doing this kind of complete turn, and it's just like, oh no, I lied.
Still
I'm gonna ruin your life.
Except that, you know, and in some way, you know, that is a terrible thing to do, and I'm not going to say I'll forgive him for that, but in some ways, I could kind of take that he was being a knight of hammer if Kota actually reacted to it in a way that made any kind of logical sense, except he doesn't, and goes and kills him. The whole, like, principle of cause to effect kind of seems to bypass Gaim entirely.
Well,
and it's just kind of like, I wrote down a disjoint list of events and vaguely thought how to get between them. It's what it seems like to me,
well,
anyway.
Gaim for me has a lot of problems that a lot of other mediocre art, which proclaims itself great, has, which it's allergic to consequence. Like, nothing happens in any heavy, long-lasting sense, and by the end, it's a railroad. It's, you guys ever played tabletop role-playing games?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what Gaim is. It's a terrible bit of tabletop, because the GM has this great idea about what everyone's gonna do, and what's gonna happen, and you, my friend, you're gonna become a god, and you're gonna do battle with the force of nature, but all the player characters are like, okay, well now I've made up a character, and I'm gonna play them out, and I'm gonna give them a story. It's like, no. No, you all will fall into these roles, and that's it. But I don't want to. I'd like to.
It's like,
maybe...
I want to be a dancer. Exactly.
But that's the thing. Like, the only problem with an analogy is that the characters aren't even seemingly trying to pull very hard on their own desires.
That's
it's like,
true.
You know, if I could, to be honest, I could accept Gaim a lot more in some senses if that were the case. If the characters were constantly sitting there and talking to the GM, you know, for the show itself, talking to that and saying, you know, but why do we have to act like this? Why is this the case? You know, if they were constantly trying to think about why they were acting the way they were and questioning themselves on their own actions, then it would kind of become something different, because they're actually taking a critical look at themselves and the way they're acting.
It actually would have been a deconstruction like everyone said it was.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, if, you know...
I hate the concept of deconstructions. Like, even just as a concept, I hate them.
Well, that's
they're useful if they teach you
crappy ones.
They're useful if they teach you something about the genre you're deconstructing. They are not useful if you're trying to do it for shock value,
which I think
is what most deconstructions tend to be.
Yeah.
From
which
what
is
I've seen,
what Oliver Urbucci's deconstructions are.
But they're not. That's the thing. They claim to be deconstructions. They're not.
Yeah,
They're taking the tropes and making them dark. That's not a deconstruction. That's just
taking
a grim dark version of the
thing.
Like,
he watched Ava and he's like, this is what I want to do to everything.
Which should be great, except, again,
that's not
Ava's
what he
good.
Does. Like,
Ava does what it set out to do.
You can be forgiven for anything if the final product is good. Gaim is not good.
No, No, it's not.
No, no.
Like, it is a craft
really
failure
isn't.
Beginning to end.
I think the most disappointing thing is it fails to deliver on everything it promises.
Yes.
That's
yeah,
the biggest
like that,
you know.
That's where it is, because Gaim could have been so good.
Amazing. Oh yeah, like totally. I think that was actually one of the most frustrating things watching it, was you could see it's like the idea you've got there is like, and is that close to being something we could really roll with, but you're just screwing it up at every possible opportunity. But, you know, that was the most frustrating thing, because every week I was like, come on, guys, come on, you're so close, you're so close.
It really felt at a point like he was actively writing it specifically for me to dislike it, because I'm like, okay, well, I see where you're going.
He found you, and just, you know, just for you.
I mean, Lord knows I have my vendettas with him in the Magical Girl fandom.
Yeah. Your Tumblr bears reference to that.
But it was like, okay, well exactly, if I can maybe see where you're going, you're doing a couple things that maybe in the future I can get on board with this if it goes certain ways. It's just like, no, I'm going to what? I'm sorry, my cat is making noise.
Welcome our new guest host.
It's like, I'm going to specifically go in this other terrible direction that makes absolutely no sense, just to spite my audience.
You see, that's the thing. Like, this is what I don't really understand, is that, like, Urobuchi, he doesn't even seem to think that his audience actually exists. It's like he would write regardless of whether there was an audience or not. And I'm kind of like, well then, what do you think of your audience? Do you credit them with intelligence? Do you credit them with anything? Or do you just, or are you just writing because you feel like, and if you don't think they exist, then why are you bothering? Like, what's your motivation here?
Well,
I don't
understand. In fairness, like, I will give him this. It could very well be he has the pure artistic motivation that he has this idea inside of himself and he just has to put it out. It's just that...
Okay, but you don't do the same
idea
like three times.
Like, oh, you mean bad stuff happens to good people and you just kind of have to go forward with the rest of your life because you don't have a choice? And, oh, the system's corrupt? You don't say. And sometimes life is
I've never heard that idea before.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, you're telling me so many things
life
I've never learned before.
Get out of town! Sometimes you don't have control over your situation. No!
No way.
Thanks for that breaking news.
Being a control freak could lead to bad things? Huh! It's you know, compare, I think, to a lot of other writer series where the information they gave to me, the information I took from it, because, again, art exists between the work and the person interpreting the work.
Mm, of course.
That's my thing. Anyway.
Well, no, that makes sense.
Yeah, the things I took from all of these other writer shows are specific life lessons about certain kinds of things sucking and how you deal with those kinds of things sucking, or just, you know, meditations on things that suck. Specific things, like violence. What does violence mm-hmm. do to us? How do we react?
What does it mean, to be defined by your past? What does it mean to move on from the past into the future? That's what I love about Agato so much.
Yeah.
It's all about, like, it's about a man who's ruled by his past, a man who's trying to forget his past, and a man who has forgotten his past.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting, like, way of looking at life.
Or like, I am also a big fan of the explicitly, you know, helping kids grow up stories, because I feel
definitely.
Like Kamen Rider's done, you know, there's Forza, there's Den-O, there's...
Kiva.
Hibiki.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Hibiki. I love...
Oh, God, Hibiki. Oh,
Hibiki.
Oh, Hibiki.
But it's just, you know, these series want to take you on a journey, and by the end of it, they want you to feel something. You know, you have a direction to go in life. Whereas at the end of Gaim, I feel like there is no direction to go, because all he has said is, the system sucks.
Everything is terrible.
You are complicit, and you can't change anything because you're helpless. And it's like, well, that's...
Well, I was going to say, and also, if you break it down, every other Kamen Rider, like, at the end of the series, pretty much... They're still normal people who have the ability to transform. They're not, like... They don't... they don't transcend their humanity in that sense. Whereas when it gets to the end of Gaim, he becomes the man of the beginning or whatever. And it's like it's kind of like he turns around to you and says, the only way you can affect change is to deify yourself and become this thing that you can't become. Therefore, there's no point to try.
Yeah.
Whereas the end of every other Rider series, you're like, they're still normal people, despite... Like, that's why I love Ryotaro in Deno.
Mm.
Because yeah. he's a complete klutz. And, like, bad luck is just everything happens to him. And sometimes, you know, life can feel like that. But he manages to save the entire universe and all of time because, you know, because he's willing to train and try hard and that kind of thing. So, whereas in Gaim, it's just like, you know, why bother if you can't become a god? Which is a really stupid message.
Well, or you know, to break it down to its sort of symbolic framework, like, why bother if you can't rule the system? Because
yeah.
even
if you
can't become the system, you can't beat the system.
Well, and here's the thing.
Exactly.
He doesn't even beat the system. He becomes the system.
And he complies.
And he just says, yes. Oh, it's another brick in the wall? Okay. Welcome, my son. Welcome to the machine. You know, that's it. That's
go on and wreck other people's lives. Totally cool.
Yeah, or you know, or let someone else wreck their lives and don't say anything because you're complicit, and because you're complicit, because
you're not a hero either. That's the other thing as well.
And it's that same thing where it's like, we talked during the Gaim years, the dark times.
Because blimey, it felt like that long.
Yeah, during the dark times. But about
when the Empire, when the walls fell.
Everyone's so lucky that by the time I joined this show, I was already out.
but there was, you know, we had talked during that time about, you know, there is the fact that, yes, if you live in Western society, which is most of the people who are going to be hearing this, because that's about the only way you could get hold of Kamen Rider that is subtitled in English. Anyway, you know, you are in many ways standing on the backs of millions of people who are basically enslaved to creating the world you live in. And that's terrible. But the fact that you understand that happens, and the fact that in many ways we are all complicit in that happens, does not make it right and does not mean that we should not agitate in ways big and small for change, which is so very much not what Gaim is saying. Gaim just seems to be saying, well, there's a bad system, and people suffer and die all the time, and there's people being enslaved and harmed and abused and used like things.
Oh,
and, you know,
well.
That's, yeah, exactly. Oh, well, that's the
and
world
also,
you live in.
Well, exactly, and also, and it places so much emphasis on the power of the individual, which is really bizarre for Kamen Rider, because that's not usually how it's played out. Even though the Riders themselves are powerful people, it's never really implied that they should be judge, or they, you know, that they should hold the world to account in some way.
It's actually often quite the opposite.
Yes, exactly.
Well, there's always a lot of questioning about what is your role as a Superman in this world?
Of normal people, yeah exactly.
Like, because the one of the things that I think Amit and Ego Devil I've heard talk about is the fact that, like, you know, sometimes people, like, go to punch the Kamen Rider, or he tries to, like, hug a child or pet a dog, and he can't do it because his freakish, hellish strength makes him too much. It's very much a Musashi sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
He's too good. He's too powerful. He's just so naturally amazing at it. But then they don't say, and because he's naturally amazing, he should be in charge. It's like, no, he's so powerful, he needs to scale back, and he can't have the things that you and I have.
Mm.
And it's,
if anything, his power is what isolates him in the world, rather than that which frees him. Which is interesting as a way of going about it. But then I guess that comes from the origins of it, where he was forced into that position, rather than having attained it by work or anything like that.
That and the fact that Ishinomori loves him some humanist attack dogs, and if he's going to have a guy who's going to be his humanist attack dog, it's like, well, yeah, but I can't give everything to them. They have something.
Well, no, but it's more realistic
it is,
that way. I mean, like, you know, if some, you know, like, I mean,
there
are a lot of
superheroes. It's also just more interesting that way.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, if, you know, if you give superhero powers to somebody who's got it all together, the story is zero interesting in terms of, you know, how it's, because, you know, if they instantly know how to cope with them, you don't have anything to, they have nothing to be taught, they have nothing to learn.
They have nothing
and there's no
jobs.
Journey.
That was actually a really interesting thing about Forze, is that Gentaro is that. There was really no growth in Gentaro. But
no.
He wasn't the one who was supposed to be growing. His,
yeah, exactly.
His entire role was to be a catalyst for the growth of literally every single other person in the
yep.
show. Which he was,
which
was an amazing route to take.
Yeah.
And he does do that wonderfully. And it's sad that the pacing of the story didn't work in such a way to really support that to the best that it could have.
No. You get glimpses of, like, the perfection it might have been, but you don't... never quite
Jake is
gets,
the glimpses
yeah.
of the perfection it might have been, let's be honest here.
Yeah, no, he is, yeah, that's true. Because he changes so much throughout
yeah,
the course
no,
of the series.
Yeah, no, his full story arc is completely amazing, and is quite honestly, like, my favorite thing in the show.
I like to think Ryusei and Tomoko as well, like, have a kind of... There's bits of that. I don't know, I just really am endeared to Tomoko for some reason. There's just some reason she really speaks to me as, like, as a character. I don't know. I think with Forze, I know, I rewatched episode 32 today, 31 and 32 today. Oh, man.
Is that the end of
yes, it
the
is.
Ryusei
it's
arc?
The, it's called Birth of
okay,
Conflict States.
Yeah.
Although, I'm falling in love with the Asugi-sensei.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I just find him utterly hilarious.
Because he's
so
delightful.
Funny. Kisaragi!
He's absolutely delightful.
Oh, I love him so much. I don't know, because he's really interesting character, because he gets so, like, he's so kind of neglected a lot, but then actually he kind of becomes more heroic. I really wished he'd become a rider, like, kind of. There's a little bit of me that kind of wished he'd become a rider somehow.
It's actually really funny, because his actor thought that he'd end up playing one of the horoscopes.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, is that the pro... He talks about the promo meeting, doesn't he? In the premiere thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Because he thought he wasn't handsome enough to be
Aww.
A protagonist.
Oh, Asugi-sensei, we love you.
I know, he's so great.
I must admit, the whole thing in episode, like, in 29 and 30, where Gentaro's phone... is open and Yuki's shouting down his phone about the rabbit hutch, and he's like, what is this rabbit hutch thing? And he goes to an actual rabbit hutch. I was like, oh man.
He was just so delightful. I mean, other than being really creepy.
That was a little
Sonoda
bit weird. That was a little bit weird.
In the beginning.
But then to be honest, I felt really sorry for him, though. When she just disappears and he's like constantly like, I don't know, I just kind of felt really sorry for him. Because he was never...
I do feel sorry for him, but, like, all of my
pity
is for
her. I totally...
Forever.
I know, but just... I don't know, the fact that he never ever finds out... Like, even when he joins the Kamen Rider Club, he never kind of finds out.
Well,
I don't know. Or I haven't seen the series yet, so I don't know. The fact that he hasn't found out yet. I assume he does. Or something.
Yeah, well, at this point, no one else knows.
Well, apart from Virgo
knows
and...
right now.
No.
No one in the... No,
no
one
true,
in the Kamen
true.
Rider
no
Club
one knows.
No about
the horoscopes, which is...
So that's
yeah, but
yeah.
It's, yeah, for now. But no, I do love Asugi-sensei. He's one of the best characters. He's just so funny.
He really is. He's absolutely delightful.
Is he a comedy actress? Oh, actor in Japan?
Yeah.
Is he part of
a comedy duo? You see his partner in the Everybody Uchikita.
Oh, let's
yeah,
go space!
The guy with the computer teacher with the giant bow tie.
Is that his comedy
partner?
Okay. See, I can kind of...
Okay.
He does... The thing is, though, like, most Japanese comedy I've seen isn't really very funny, but, like,
oh, like
he...
the Rokuko?
I don't know, just like...
The wordplay stuff?
The wordplay stuff I kind of give a pass to because I'm not a native speaker, so I obviously wouldn't find
yeah.
it funny. Like, you know, I find it funny how people can watch things like Blackadder and that are not in England, like, you know, and the IT crowd not in English and find them funny because a lot of it's to do with wordplay and accents and that kind of thing, which obviously isn't funny when you translate things. So I kind of give that a pass because, you know, but like all the kind of slapstick comedy, I'm kind of like, nah, really? And it's just a lot of it's just about like shouting and kind of like, ah, and you're like, it's not really that funny to me. But I don't
know.
Well,
you know, a lot of people have similar things to say. Like, I end up occasionally, and people are like, yeah, American comedy movies are just terrible.
Mm.
It's like, well, what until you watch?
Yeah, well, that's because they are.
You know, like Joe Dirt and all of the, you know, they start naming off all of the late 90s, early aughts Adam Sandler ones.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's because all those movies are about laughing at people.
Are terrible.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Not fun.
I don't know, I'm always... I don't know, because my favorite comedy is all, like... I like scripted and kind of intelligent comedy. I don't know, like, I'm a massive fan of Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister. I think they're, like, just wonderful. And Blackadder and The Two Ronnies and all that kind of, like... And a lot of, like, British 80s comedy really appeals to my sense of humor. Whereas, like, what I'm watching, like, this kind of sitcoms I'm seeing now, especially in... This is mostly coming from a British perspective, so I can kind of understand why it might not make as much sense. But, like, it just... I don't know, there just seems to be this... It kind of comes across as very puerile, whereas a lot of that came across as kind of very intelligent, which kind of, I guess, appeals to me more in some senses. Or maybe I just don't find things funny, I don't know. There's always that option.
Well, that's, you know, humor is such a very...
Subjective, yeah. Oh, yeah, totally, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, that's just my thing about comedy. But no, that's, sorry, we were talking about Forza. And it's awesome.
Forza
is great for all that they screwed up a bunch of things. It's still such a solid show.
It definitely feels like a world and a construct that kind of works as its own thing. Although I don't know, because the interesting thing I keep finding is that a lot of the way that the Rider series work is a lot of them feel like they're set in their own bubble universes. Whereas, like, some of them feel like they're actually set in a world that's bigger than just their bubble. And I don't know whether I don't know which I prefer.
Yeah.
I can't decide.
Well, you know, I think it really depends on the series and whatnot. I've actually really come to enjoy the bubble universe thing, if only because after spending so long as a really devoted fan of American superhero comics, you know, I'm not going to say I'm the most or I know the most about it, but, you know, I've read a lot of them. But, like, after a while, like, they've told all the stories, at least as far as I care to read.
They tend to tell all of the stories, like, five times.
Yeah, and...
Like, once they're done telling the story, they will tell it again.
And, you know, and then the characters kind of flanderize after a while where one trait just sort of overrides everything and... All of the nuance is lost. Whereas with Rider, you know, you start fresh every year. And you have to tell a new story about a different thing every time. And, you know, I like the crossovers. I like the crossovers way more than they deserve, because they scratch a very certain kind of itch in me.
I like a lot of the movie wars. I haven't watched any Tysons.
Really?
I haven't watched I haven't seen any of them.
Kamen Rider Tizen is actually worth a watch, I would say. It comes...
Okay. It's
see, the thing is, my problem with, like, the modern Tizens is I can't watch anything with Gaim in it.
Well, yeah, that's only going to be a problem, from now.
Maybe with a couple more years, like, it will be bearable.
Well, I wonder if...
My gag reflex won't be quite as strong.
I wonder if at some point they're going to kind of do the whole, like, the thing that Kamen Rider Tizen did for Fize. I wonder if they're going to do that for Gaim in a future movie somehow.
Yeah.
It would be intriguing to see how they would go, because it would kind of be an admission from the production team. They were like, yeah, that really wasn't great, was it? Kind of thing, you know. Like,
they bombed.
Well, I feel like Gaim, just in its actually last episode, the one that was not written by Urobuchi.
Yeah.
You know, they tried to play a lot of damage control with that thing.
It was kind of pitiful in some senses, watching it.
It's as you had observed, there was no way for them to end the show with any sort of integrity.
Nope. That ship had sailed.
It kept betraying itself because there was nothing it could do at any point. You know, when Urobuchi was writing it, when someone else was writing, there was nothing it could do except do that.
I don't know, the Zakuza crossover was quite good. I enjoyed that.
Half of it was good.
Well,
What
was hilarious about the Zakuza crossover was that, like, every time the Zakuzas were on screen with the Riders, they were just taking the mick constantly out of how serious the Riders were being about everything.
Yeah.
They were like, you have a banana on your head, that's
amazing.
Hilarious.
That was the most amazing, and that kind of really petered off in the second half when you could kind of tell the Gaim staff was taking
exactly.
over.
Exactly, and I was like, but that's what's funny about the crossover.
The first half with the Tokuger, with the Tokugers was just amazing. It's like, oh, we're in the... Gaim is just like, oh, we're this big, serious, dark show trying to do this really serious message and in then, Tokyo. And then Riker's like, where are some dorks on a train?
Hey, hi!
Yeah, and then
notice that you're fruit samurais?
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
I was gonna say, and then Riker comes in, he's like, why do you have an orange on your head? It's just
like, I, why did an orange just fall out of the sky?
Can I have an orange? Like, it just, that's why I love Wright so much.
I love Tokuger so much.
I love
everything about Tokuger. Actually, there are some things that I don't, but I am exaggerating, but I love so many things
I just want to ride the rainbow line. That's just the simplest thing.
Yeah.
You just, you know.
Like, I hate the president of the rainbow line. I wish they would stop putting him in episodes. I can't look at him.
Why?
He's horrifying. He's horrifying!
It's just... I just wish I understood...
Imagine its owner under there. It's Station Master under
there. Oh, yeah, no, that's totally Station
See,
Master
this is the thing,
there.
Right? I just wish they would... All these, like, sleights of hand, I just don't... I don't get it. I kind of get what they're going for, but I just wish they'd be a bit more open about how it's... It is obviously a joke. I just wish they'd kind of dispense with it sometimes. I don't know.
That's fair.
Like
the rabbit mask really freaks me out.
It's a bit weird. I give you that.
And I can't look at it. It makes me really uncomfortable.
I will admit, some of the aesthetic choices in Tokuger are very strange. Like, the whole kind of, I mean, Wagon just as a whole is very strange. No.
Yeah.
And like,
uncomfortable.
At least Wagon got better.
Oh no, that's true. She has
at least Wagon existing became better.
She hasn't taken selfies since episode, like, 4, which is really a good thing.
Yeah, like,
really good thing.
Episode, like, 6 or so, whenever she was doing, like, the sit-in protest, I'm like, I'm completely done with you.
Mm.
Like, I have no desire for you to still be in this show, which is terrible because I love Naomi. And you are literally robot Naomi.
Mm.
But then she stopped doing that.
Yeah, they did. They definitely
and
did.
And they kind of toned her down because I think they realized she was a little too much.
Yeah, which is good that they're kind of reacting to these things. Also, the mecha are a bit. I'm not sure about the mecha.
Oh, they're terrible.
They're
not good.
I don't know. Like, some of them are okay.
Build Rush is okay.
They keep making me want to buy the toys, and then I look at the toys and I'm like, oh right, that's just my fondness for the show rubbing off on the toys. Good advertising,
oh, yeah, no,
guys.
That's...
You almost got me.
Yeah, no, I bought
really
the Apple
the toys,
Changer.
Like...
Yeah.
I bought the Apple Changer because I love Akira that much. I would never recommend anyone buy that.
No. You said,
I
you
would
said,
recommend
you, yeah.
they buy Figure Arts Hana before they buy the Apple Changer.
Do they have Figure Arts Hana?
It's terrible.
Oh, yeah, she's awful.
Oh, wow.
She has a big anime face.
Oh, dear.
It's not even that. Her faces are actually pretty decent.
Mm.
Her arms are single jointed.
Right.
You can't move her legs.
What?
She has her shoulders have no real range of motion.
Okay.
She has very little poseability. She can basically do the poses on the box.
Oh,
and that's it.
I get the impression it was designed by somebody who was having a really bad day, and they were like, it has to fulfill this specification, it will fulfill only this specification,
yeah, I mean,
and nothing else.
To be fair, Hana was their first swing at doing an out-of-suit person.
Oh, is that what it was?
Much less a girl.
Okay. Well,
so, I mean, I can pass them for her being terrible, because the Sailor Moon figure arts are all fantastic.
If I'm honest, I'm kind of glad that was the one that they screwed up in some senses, rather than any of the ones that I'd actually want to buy. Although, that makes kind of fans. You know, I wish they got something better. I wish they'd redone it, like, as a V2, like, later on.
I wish they would do a new Hana.
Mm.
Like, with all of the Sailor Moon mobility, because they did a great job on those.
Mm.
But, I mean, Hana suits the purposes I need her for, so...
Yeah, fair enough. I was going to say, on...
And she was, like, $20.
Yeah. On Tokuger, does anyone want a 7th Tokuger? Because I was...
No.
I was up for that, but no one else seems to be.
From the get-go, I was wanting Grita to be Tokyo Zero, and for her to be Indigo.
Early on, I could have been totally on board with it. At this stage, there's... way too many things going on with the Shadow Line, and I know even more stuff happens in 40? 40 is this week?
Yeah, but I'm giving
it haven't, I haven't watched
I'm
this
two episodes,
yet.
I'm two episodes behind. I'm two episodes behind. I've seen 38. I haven't seen 39 yet. Or 40.
Okay, then we won't tell you what happens.
I will watch them.
Everyone dies. Sorry.
Oh, man! You suck.
It's just, there's way... everything with Zed happened way too fast.
Mm.
And now we're and then we got saddled with Mork.
He did.
Who is utterly pointless.
He did seem to be in it for, like, a long time not doing a great deal. And then a great deal happened in very, as you say, in a very short space of time. And you're kind of like, but you could have spread that out over that period of time.
It's the entire period where he wasn't there should have lasted longer.
I don't know, because one of the big problems I have with a lot of Toku is that they kind of introduce their final villain very late in the show, and you haven't really got any time to have any decent amount of threat about such person.
Well, see, the thing is, he should have come in at the halfway point.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I can give you that, yeah.
He came in within, like, the teens.
Yeah, it was like 18, something. It was nearly the 20s, but not like nowhere near.
It was
earlier than that. It was like 15, 16.
I want to say like even as early 14? As 12, 13, because I had his first appearance as the finale of the first quote unquote season in my notes.
Fair enough.
Then it may have been like 13, 14.
Yeah. Around.
But still, it was. Yeah, no, I know it, you mean. Yeah, I can agree with
it
you.
It was way too early. It should have been at the halfway point. That would have been a really great build-up to him.
Mm.
Then had the wedding, the whole, like, build-up to the wedding go until about 30. Have the whole Empress Gritta go to about 35. And then move us into this kind of final stage that's going on.
Mm.
Have him reabsorb Gritta, and now his whole big thing is the last 15 episodes of the show.
Mm. Yeah, no, that
just would have been much better pacing for that storyline.
Yeah. I do wonder. I was just interested because, like, I know I haven't seen a lot of conversations about there being another Takuya, and I wondered if this was something people were talking about or not, because I don't know.
It was something that was talked about a lot more early on, and I think as
it became
kind of
clear,
once we hit the halfway point, we're like, okay, well, that's not. There's really no way we're going for that, so let's just drop the discussion.
But didn't Kiryuji, like, introduce people really late on? I got the impression they just...
Kiryuji just never stopped.
I was gonna say,
yeah,
like,
Kiryuji was not good.
No, I know, it's not beyond the realms of...
It had good things in it,
but it had Daigo in it, too.
Yeah, there was also Daigo. And Yayoi.
Oh, yeah, true, yeah, I'll give you that. I don't know, I haven't really seen much Kiryuji, I can't really... It's just so... bland to me. I don't know what it is. There's just something really bland about it. I'm just like, but I've seen Dinosaur Sentai. There was U-Ranger, and it was much better than this. It's kind of my opinion.
Here's the... Well, like, I'll give this to Kiryuter. I actually really loved, like, in the first five episodes that I watched, I loved the villain designs of the generals.
Oh, they were good.
Oh,
they were good.
Like, everything else, it was like, ah, brave, Samba Dance. Well, that's very nice.
It was.
I have such a problem with their use of brave.
Mm.
Well, it's a cool English word.
No,
it doesn't
but
mean
the,
things.
The thing is,
oh, no, it does. That's the problem.
They take the concept of bravery. And it's kind of the core of what everyone's doing, and I can get behind that. But they elevate it to being the concept of bravery, which is something they should be trying to instill in children. They make it into, like, this special elevated power that only the Kyoryugers have. No one else has brave.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, you're telling these kids who aren't Kyoryugers that they're not also brave. That's literally what you're telling them.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Well, I'm just going to go
I'm going to be me and compare this to Bokenger.
I'm so surprised. I nearly fell off my chair. I can't imagine.
Because Bokenger does the exact opposite. It's like Bokenger takes the concept of precious and be like, "Okay, there are specific artifacts, specific things that have special power, and by the end of the series, they completely go past that to, no, every human being, every single person and their dreams is precious and has power, and we can power our giant robot on our ambitions alone."
Which, No lie, that's how Sentai should work.
Oh yeah, totally,
yeah.
Totally.
No, it's completely amazing.
I have such a fondness, especially as I get older and become, you know, having passed through my cynical goth phase, my gaim years, as I think I will refer to it here. Look,
at least Gaim has given us this.
I could just imagine you walking around with a giant orange on your head for, like, most of those years.
I'm going to just imagine a giant orange on my head and that same super serious, like, everything is painful, darkness.
And then the Takujas arrived and asked you why you had a giant orange on your head, and suddenly, life changed.
That's kind of actually, you know, in a very... That's kind of how I grow. But, you know, like, as I get older, I really appreciate things when they're going to young people. You know, going to the kids I could have been and start saying stuff like, well, you know, look, yeah. You know, the stuff that's going to get you through isn't being special. It isn't being the chosen one. That's not going to help you because...
Odds on, you're not going to be that chosen.
Yeah, that's just statistically speaking. And even if you were, none of your friends are. So what's going to get you through is each other. You learn to be a good citizen, and this is what being a good citizen looks like. This is what it means, which, of course, is why so many people loved Gaim, because Gaim didn't have any freaking opinion about who you should be or what it meant to be a good person or what being a good person looked like, because all you had to do to be a good person was be better than Michi and Takatora.
Which isn't hard.
That ain't hard.
Yeah.
Like, I was going to say that's because that's one of the,
that's
yeah
literally everyone
because that's one of the
that's the villains of most.
I was going to say yeah, that's true. I mean that's the,
like, congratulations, the entire villain cast of Go-Onger is better than Michi.
But the villain cast of Go-Onger are awesome.
Yeah, well they are,
but they are that.
But still, no, I take the point. But because that was the thing I was intrigued. I kind of wanted with GoBusters more than not GoBusters with Gokaiger more than I kind of got. I wondered if at the end it was going to be the people on the Earth's belief in them that revived all of the Sentai powers from the Ranger Keys. I wondered if they were going to go down that route. It'd be like because the people believed in the Sentai's ability to save them.
That was one of the movies. I think I want to say like the 999 Heroes or whatever.
Yeah,
that
may have been 199 Heroes. That sounds about right. I actually don't remember that.
I don't really either, because it was supposed to be Ghost Asia versus Gokaiger, except the Ghost Asia were in it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, no one cares about Ghost Asia.
And they
shut up! Nobody cares about Ghost Asia. Ghost Asia is friggin' awesome, and I will not hear another word against
it. I love Ghost Asia.
Okay,
I love Ghost Asia.
Fair dude.
I just didn't like Ghost Asia in that movie because their motivation made no sense.
No, exactly. I quite agree.
All I know is that at the end of the movie, it was about, you know, there's an old collector of toys who has kept it really well, and he passes it off to the kid, and the kid's like, yeah, I collect these too now, and I take good care of it, and because I believe in Super Sentai, and everyone believe in Super Sentai, we believe in you, Super Sentai, and then they fought the reincarnation of the Black Cross King, and it was freaking amazing.
That was when they had, like, all of the mecha were like, that was pretty cool.
Go Rangers super vehicle, because they didn't start having mecha till Battle Fever J, I think.
Yes, yeah. Because they stopped because they took the idea for the mecha from the Tokusatsu Spider-Man series, I think.
Yep.
From what I learned.
Because I think Battle Fever J was originally intended to be like Japanese Avengers. And then like they stopped doing Marvel stuff.
Yeah, because Stanley wanted to adapt that. Since no, there was something.
He wanted to do Goggle, not Goggle 5. Sun Vulcan.
Yeah, Sun Vulcan. I heard that was yeah. But no, like, I think I don't know. I did like that part of 109 Heroes. That was cool. But no, Ghost Age is awesome because it got me into Sentai properly, which I think is.
I love Ghost Age. I will again
You'll fight anyone who like.
I will fight anyone who tries to talk bad about Alita.
No, Alita's cool. Like he. He really gets...
There are people don't like him because he's not marvelous.
But, like,
he's not, like, hot-blooded shonen protagonist.
But when he... But,
like,
but,
that
like,
doesn't
but
make
has,
any sense for his character.
But he has conviction. I think that's the key to his character, is the conviction. Because, like, when he's fighting... Oh, he's fighting one of the monsters in, like... It's, like, in a factory and there's loads of pipes everywhere. And he gets that proper, like, he's like, I'm going to fight people to protect people from the darkness because I am going to fight people. You know, like, he has this utter conviction in that's his mission and that's what he's going to do. And that's what makes his character work for me. I just really connected with the whole cast. I thought they worked really well together. I really liked the Siak. I can't remember their names now, though.
Yes, he was, Hyde.
Yes. Hyde was he was... And his whole story with Gosei Green, like, I thought that was really interesting. I was like, I don't think we've had one of, like... Where you have a Sentai cast member who gets killed before the whole thing even starts off, and you've never met this guy, but it's a really informing part of his character.
I got really distracted because Gosei Green is also Deka Green.
Oh really?
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
I got really distracted because I'd already seen Deka Ranger, and I love Sen. I'm like, oh, it's you again. Hi. Oh no, you died. That's sad. Don't do that.
Don't do that thing, man. Don't do that thing. Oh no. Ghost Age was cool. I watched it so long ago now. It just seems bizarre because that was like what 2011, I think. I watched that, which then I watched Gokaiger straight after that. So it was a bit of a. And then Kamen Rider began, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's so much to see. I must watch everything.
I need to rewatch Decade and Gokaiger now that I've seen...
Everything up to that, yeah.
Everything. Like, when I watched Decade, I hadn't seen anything before Decade.
I think it's a great way to figure out which series you want to go for.
I don't know if Decade actually did that for me. Oh. I think I had other plans of where I was going. But I'd heard, for some reason, like, I'd heard so many negative things about Decade that I'm just like, well, I'm gonna watch it so I can't compare any of the other shows to what I'm being shown of them in Decade.
See, that's the thing, like, that's kind of, I've seen episode one of Decade, so I kind of know what they're going for, but I really don't want to watch it until I've seen all of Heisei, which is kind of difficult because that requires me to watch a lot of stuff, but... Like, I don't know, I'm getting there. Yeah. I'm getting there slowly. It's like, it's just taking a bit longer than I wanted it to.
I mean, the problem is now that I don't actually remember any of Decade. Except for the Amazon episode.
Didn't Decade have a Shinkenger episode, from what I heard?
Yep. Yes. Like, yep. Yes, it was weird.
Like,
Rider Sentai crossover?
Yeah, like, they... Shinkenger has a Decade episode, and Decade has a Shinkenger episode.
Well, the Decade folks show up at the beginning and end of... The related Shinkenger. They don't really take part in the episode.
It's mostly in Decade.
Yeah. Mm. But
it's not quite like the Gaimto Kyuger crossover.
No. I was going to say, I really want to watch Shinkenger. There's so much Sentai I want to watch at the moment.
Do.
I just...
Yes,
oh.
Shinkenger was really good. Shinkenger is a little weird for me in that it is a story where I connected more to the story than any of the characters specifically. I really loved the energy in Shinkenger. I really loved the setting and everything they were doing. It's just, I didn't end up connecting to anyone, which is weird for me. And it's weird that I still like the show so much in spite of that, because I'm completely character driven.
I don't know, sometimes settings and concepts just really get you, though, don't they? They really grab you in a way that really makes sense. Like, Agito, for me, was kind of like...
I really love Japanese folklore.
Mm, yeah, fair.
So,
yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
I mean, Shinkenger
right
was basically like, here, take it.
Have the things you love.
Take it and go.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, because Agito was kind of like that for me initially. Like, I didn't really connect with a lot of the characters, but now it more so. The story kind of got me along, and then I really kind of fell in love with Hikawa and Shoichi, and I was like, yeah, there's a thing there. But I know what you mean. Sometimes you just kind of get really attached into it. You want to know how the story works rather than you want to know why the characters are doing what they're doing. I guess it's kind of, you can get into a show many ways, though. I know some people that watch certain shows just for the designs. They literally are just watching for, you know, they care about CG or they care about fight direction or whatever it is, you know. But it's...
Or the opposite. I have a friend, while I was starting to watch Gaim, and even before I had been like, man, I'm not sure about this one, it was just like, nope, fruit coming out of the sky, nah, can't take it seriously, I'm out.
See, my friend. See, this is the thing. Like, I have a friend who's like that. He did that with Drive. Like, I should have said one of Drive just because we were watching like a lot of random shows at the time, and just like, oh, try this one, see what you think. And he was like, oh, okay, fine. And like, we got to the end of it, he was just like, that was possibly the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I was like, oh, you haven't even seen the half of it yet. Let me show you some other things.
That
was actually, like, what got me on board with Gaim, though. I loved the Gaim suits.
Mm.
I thought they were amazing, because I, again, I didn't expect the show to be even slightly serious.
I was impressed.
I completely expected the Go-Onger of Kamen Riders.
I was impressed that they managed... Not they managed to take it so seriously, because that's not kind of what they did, but they managed to play it so straight. I think that was probably what impressed me about it so much.
Yeah.
We've got a silly concept, we'll admit that, but we're going to try our best to not wink at the audience. That was kind of the thing I appreciated about it. Because, like, I'll be honest, like, a lot of the suit designs, they were rad as heck. Like, Mango Arms is my favourite design ever. I love it so much, apart from Forze's base states, but, like, it's one of my favourite suit designs. And, you know, I can completely go with that, but, like, there were so many other problems.
Yeah. Suit design
I tried to hang into Gaim for the suit designs. Like, when we first got the suit designs, I really wanted a figure art Ryugen. Because I wanted him to be part of my weird little Ryo Melee family, because I, like, the first photo, I'm like, that looks like Melee from Gekiranger, except grapes. And I'm like, aw, he'd fit in so good with this little set that I've got. And then Michi happened. And I'm like, I can't...
Be associated with this
I
character.
I can't do it. Like... I'm like, I can't support your existence in any possible way.
You know, like, I'm gonna... I feel like I should be more adamant about not supporting Gaim, but... When it comes time to pick up a Gaim figure to represent the series in my figure arts collection, because I've decided I want at least one from every series because I'm a nerd and a completist like that, I'm just going to get Malika because, again, I'm not a big fan of the way they played her.
Mm.
I feel like they did her pretty dirty. It's just not... They did not treat her very well at all, no, and it was okay.
It's a mess. It's a
I'm not going to say things, because I'd be saying things I've said on literally every other episode.
Yeah, but
it's a complete mess, full stop. Let's just be leaving.
But it is the thing where I do want to give them money for the female writer characters, so that they can at least have some sense, so these can sell. People do like these. And then it's just a question of hoping that the box... Like I got the Nadashiko figure.
Oh, cool.
And, like, the box is, like, all her, you know, looking at all these cutesy poses. I'm like, no.
Oh, really? Oh.
I'm not here to...
Do where she snaps a guy's neck.
Yeah, I'm not here
she
for...
She does
I'm
that,
here to
man.
Play into your school
oh, yeah.
girl fetish.
That's, like, her first fight in Megamax.
I want
she well, snaps
see,
a guy's
see,
neck.
I can't watch Megamax because I haven't seen O's, so I'm like, oh,
oh, you need to fix that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm glad
O seems to divide opinion, though. Like, I don't know. People seem to be really divided on O.
I like O's, but I don't like O's as much as everyone else who likes O's.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very much sharing my fiancé's opinion that, you know, Kuga and O's are, like, the right and left hand of Ryder.
Okay, I can kind of...
Or because Ryder does more... kicks the right and left foot.
Okay.
The front and back tire.
Okay. I can kind of see that. I don't know, I just... Like...
I like O's. All of my problems with O's, I kind of give a pass to, because they're all things from kind of the back end of the series, and they had to completely rewrite the end of O's as they were going.
Oh, did they?
Well, what was the...
Oh, yeah, no, because originally Ankh was going to be the final villain.
Oh, that would have been...
But kids really liked Ankh. Kids were buying cell medals and core medals and mailing them to Toei for Ankh.
Oh,
oh man.
So they're like... Oh no, we can't do this. We can't go this route.
I'd kind of give Toei a lot of credit if they kind of turned around and went, actually, yeah, we're going to go down this route anyway. I don't know. I'd love it if they did that. Just be like, we know the kids love it, but nah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be pretty great, but just the fact that all of these kids were like, all of these kids loved Ankh so much. Hmm. That they're like, we can't make Ankh the final villain. We can't do it. We're gonna go this other route and make this other guy the final villain and do this stupid purple metal story.
You take that back.
I don't like what it did to Eiji.
No, that's, like, That's fine. You can be wrong. You take that back.
I'm fine with literally everything else about it. I'm fine with the whole Maki with the purple metals, the concept of the purple metals. I just don't like what it did to Eiji as a character. It really screwed up what they were doing with him.
I thought that it was actually the perfect encapsulation of it, but
I'm the only one that seems to have the problems with Eiji that I do.
It's fair.
I'm gonna play for a sec. I'm gonna stop playing. We have different interpretations, and that's cool.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And now the playing is on, and it's okay to be wrong sometimes.
I mean, Eiji simultaneously had no desire and the biggest desire in the world.
Yeah.
The show treated Eiji's desire different from everyone else's.
Well, I just thought in its size and scope, because everyone else was more actively engaged in more recognizably capitalistic approaches.
But there's the guy that wanted to teach his kid justice.
Yeah.
That guy happened.
Yeah, he did.
And, like, why is he treated as less than Eiji?
Well, because the justice he wanted was punishment. Eiji wants to create a world where... Eiji wants the world not to have people being terrible to each other. The other guy wants to be terrible to terrible people. And this is... It's the difference between... I'm going to be Batman and go into a poor neighborhood and beat up a whole bunch of poor people because they're doing crimes, or being Bruce Wayne and, you know, taking my money and power and political influence and making schools, public works projects, etc., to create a better environment so that people won't be so poor and will have more opportunities.
Just something about the... And it's been 3 years since I've watched Oz, so I'm really bad at articulating this.
No, I totally understand. I'm not...
But it's just something about the way they played Eiji's... Like, how the narrative itself treated Eiji's desire just really rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay.
Because there were a lot of times when it was great. The end of Oz Wonderful is amazing. The gambit he pulls in Oz Wonderful is one of
beautiful.
The greatest things I've ever seen.
Movie? No, that's the... Is that the winter
that was,
movie?
Oz solo movie that had Forza show up out of nowhere at one point. Just dropped into the film. It was great.
Yeah.
Oh, so that'll be... Yeah. I know where that fits.
His whole ending gambit is... It's like, okay, you can do whatever you want as long as I can take my family home. And that was Eiji's gambit.
That's beautiful.
They're like, okay, you're kind of making this sacrifice. And then Eiji's like, oh, well, the whole world is my family.
Yep, I love them all.
And he completely, like, he believes that enough where it works. Mm-hmm. And completely overpowers the villain and they explode it or something. And like, I love Eiji when he's being kind of, like, I'm trying to figure out how to do this without swearing. Yeah, I'm just gonna say it. I love Eiji when he's being a little mother guy.
Yeah.
That's the best part of Eiji, is that he knows this, and he manipulates Ankh as much as Ankh manipulates him. And I think that's another part of what I didn't really like about the end of the show, is that Eiji lost a lot of that.
Hmm.
Eiji lost a lot of being kind of a cunning jerk.
I can see that criticism. I can see it. I think at this point it's just a question of aesthetics.
Yeah, and I mean, my aesthetics are kind of weird sometimes.
Yeah, well,
I find it really funny hearing you talk about this, because the only experience of Oz I have is the Oz Net movies, but I had the time, so I literally have no frigging idea
beautiful.
What you're talking about.
Oh, good,
like,
good.
The only thing I remember from that is the guy with a weird baby doll, and...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
and
that
he's
guy.
Actually
I
part
hate
of the show.
That
oh, seriously.
Seriously,
yeah, no, he's a real character.
Like, he is amazing.
And also, I also despise the...
He's amazing, but I still hate him.
I also despise the actor who played Eiji, because of the... There's one part of the Net movies where he goes through all of the forms that Oz has, and I had to time every single individual... Oh, God, it was horrible. Like, just... it was really funny, because when I got the job doing it, like, I said... they were all like, we need someone to do the timing for the Osnet movies. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll do it, being like a young, plucky timer who wanted to go at something. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, you do it, you do it, you do it. And I was like, I think this is a poison chalice. And then it was like, and I was sitting down, I started to time it. And I was like, you bastards, all of you. I hate all of you.
And then, Net movies are
crazy. And I emailed like, our head translator guy, and I was like, I really don't know if I can do this because it's that hard. And he was like, you can. And I was like, thanks,
supplement.
Thanks. And so and the only time product I had after that was when I had to do all the shift timings on Paradise Lost for Fies. So, you know, I just seemed to get the jobs where I had to grunt work. Or anyway, but regardless, I have fun doing it. So it's good. It's just the Osnet movies. Yeah, I'm watching the superhero tie-in ones.
Oh, my goodness.
I just love...
The superhero tie-in Net movies make... literally the best joke in Kamen Rider.
Which one?
It's during one of the Hayami ones, with Hayami and the Go Busters, where they're trying to decipher these notes that he's getting.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And somehow it goes into card suits, and he does the Tachibana scream, then stops, and it's just, I ate the puzzle piece. As just, like, that's
horrendous.
His gut, like, transcendent alternate universe memory is just, I ate the puzzle piece. And I love that Blade is still such a meme in Japan, that they're like, okay, Kosei, just do it. Go for it. Go full Tachibana. And it's absolutely amazing.
I don't know, I love the idea of Forze wandering around in a Sherlock Holmes kind of outfit with a pipe when he can't smoke it because he has no mouth.
My thing just comes down to the best meta joke. It's like, yeah, you killed all those guys because they were what's the name of the head suit actor?
Oh,
Takawa.
Yeah, Takawa. Yeah,
Takawa. Yeah, you tried to kill them because they were all Takawa, but he's me. He's inside me now. I'm like, okay, this is the bonkersest thing. It's great. And okay.
Movies are totally insane. They're literally it's like they put five writers in a room and went, we're gonna, you know, you can come out when you've come up with all these ideas, and they literally just came up with the most orange scarsh crazy ideas for a Net movie ever, and they're wonderful for that reason.
And I mean, like, that should be, like, everyone's biggest red flag about Gaim. Gaim has no Net movies.
You imagine?
I would watch them. Like, I would watch the Gaim Net movies.
They would
be better than literally anything that happened in that show.
You know, just talking about the Net movies, though, does bring me to one of the things that we touched on earlier that I wish that Gaim would have got into. Because if the end of Gaim had been them just sort of like, okay, now we've ascended, we've become gods, we will see the world as it truly is from outside the bounds of our fourth dimension, and then they just break the fourth wall, and the last episode is literally just the crew going and meeting Gen or Obuchi and being like, what the crap, man?
Oh, no, I've got it, right? When they get to that planet, they realize that planet is Earth, and they meet Malshina.
Yes!
That is the show.
Yes.
One of my favorite
would have made it all work.
Just around that point in time was that the planet they went to was the planet from which the bug people on Saban's Masked Rider came, and that's what he was the god of. Do you see? He created Masked Rider.
Well, that explains.
That explains a lot of things.
It ties ties everything together.
I just feel I have to say at this point...
rewatched the Double Net movies recently.
Oh, okay.
I forget what I was looking for in them.
But they're just wonderful.
I was looking for Shroud and not terrible lighting.
Oh, fair enough.
Because she's lit terribly throughout all of Double. But I had watched it for that because I'm trying to kind of dissect her outfit for a project that is not cosplay. But
now, is that sarcastic?
I was going to say, I'm trying to...
No, it's literally not cosplay, okay, I promise.
Look,
That will happen one day, but not yet.
Fair enough.
You have to agree that's a fair thing for us to ask.
Oh no, it is entirely a fair thing to ask.
I will admit that one of my dreams one day is that I will cosplay Forza properly. And I will do Uchu Space Guitar, and it will be the best moment of my life.
But it's... I want everyone to watch the Double Met movies, because it is the only time you get to see Shroud be a huge nerd. And just realize that her and Narumi are the biggest nerds in this show.
That makes me happy.
Mm. Like, even more than Shotaro.
That says a lot.
They are twice the nerd he is. It's amazing.
You know, I often wish that they had actually put some of that into Double the series, because, I mean, it's all very well and good that we're seeing the Chief through Shotaro's hero worship goggles, but if we could have seen just those bits where, you know, yeah, he's hard-boiled, but that doesn't mean he's this guy all the time.
I wish we could have seen more of that with Shroud and Narumi in the series, but for Shroud specifically, there's really no place for it, given her arc in the story.
No, that's true.
But, I mean, I'm glad we get to see her being a huge nerd in the Net movies. I do wish we'd got to see more of Narumi, because it would have made him more of a character.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, this icon.
Mm.
And, you know, I will say this. I never thought there would ever be a Kamen Rider costume that could pull off a fedora.
But here we are.
It worked for me. Like, I want to get that figure, it's just that it's not cheap.
Is it? Oh, God, yeah.
It's Skull.
Well, some figure arts are just not... You don't own them, you just dream of owning them.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many I want, and I have no money, and it's just like, gah.
Yeah. I really want Broken Helmet Blade.
Fair.
I want Broken Helmet Blade really badly. And I need them to make Broken Helmet Garen.
I just want every Forza state.
Just on principle.
I have everything I need for Forza, except I do still want Nadeshiko.
Is she expensive as well?
But I have.
Yeah.
I have base states and Meteor and Scorpio and Libra, so I'm good.
She's like between 50 and 60 pounds.
Jeez, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but. Well, because she was...
Was it an online exclusive? Yeah,
yeah, she was a web exclusive.
That's right.
You know, super, super collector edition.
Oh.
And
by that they just mean expensive. Like, I wish they would stop using code. They just mean expensive.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. Like, I'm a toy collector on top of everything else, which is the dumbest...
Yeah.
Mothers, don't let your babies grow up to be toy collectors.
No, please. I spent the money for the Project BM Narumi.
Yeah. And it's just...
That was... I don't regret it, but... That was some money. That was like $300.
I always go back and forth about being a fan of all these tokusatsu things that we have all become so fond of. Because so much of it relies on getting it for free.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And I don't... I wish, it's why I do need to buy the Zhu Ranger set, even though I honestly care nothing about Zhu Ranger.
You have seen it, though? You've watched it?
I tried to watch the first five, I didn't make it past three.
They are quite endearing.
It's a good show.
I'm not saying it's bad, it just wasn't for me.
Yeah, fair, fair.
Yeah, that happens.
I'm interested in Zhu Ranger for the special features as much as I am for the show itself, I think.
Yeah.
I'm really intrigued to see what they put on there in terms of special features, because that's the kind of thing I'd be really... Because the production process for Sentai and for Rider, which I imagine is reasonably similar, since it's the film, you know, that's the thing I'm really interested in, is, how it's all done, and, you know, what I really want is, an interview with the guy who scores these episodes, or, you know, the suit designer, or designers, or, you know, the VFX guy, you know, the guy who does Foley stuff, they're the people I really want to know about, because they don't ever get any, apart from the Net movies occasionally, they hardly ever get pointed out, and, they're the interesting people, because they're the ones making the creative decisions that really impact how you see a show. Mm. And, because one of the things, with the Lord of the Rings Extended box set stuff.
So much great.
Exactly,
stuff.
But they have an interview with Howard Shore on every single disc about the music he composed and how he did it and why it's so important. And like, there's just so much in it, and I really wish, especially things like Hibiki, particularly. I really wish there were those things existed, but I know they don't and they won't. So it gets me sad. Or even like,
I mean, I would love sounding like myself again. I would love to see subs for specials on the Bokenger DVDs.
Because
I know that there are cast interviews.
They've just never been.
I've watched cast talks, and they look hilarious. And I need to know what's going on.
Have you seen any of the Deno live show that TVN subbed? Have you ever watched that?
I saw the Decade live show that Kid subbed.
Okay,
painful and hilarious.
The Deno live show is actually really funny because they interview all the voice actors for the Imagine.
And, I think I may have actually seen some
of this. It's really worth a watch. Some of it's just the Deno suit actor prancing up and down, but some of it's really funny, and they do a really good job of talking to all the actors. It reminds me of a kind of convention atmosphere at a convention panel, and so it kind of appeals to my sensibilities in that sense. But they're the things I really want to see on box sets. I'd love if they did that for Cougar and Agato. I would spend much money on that. There are no words. Oh, and if they did it for Hibiki, then I would sell my soul because it would be that.
You're not gonna get the one for Hibiki because the people who wrote the part of it worth watching. That's not fair. I haven't seen the second half. The people who wrote season one.
Yeah. They never want
to
talk about it.
Seem to hate Toei now, except for the one who went on to write Wizard, and then they said, okay, now put Beast in. No, I don't want to. Put Beast in. No, I don't want to.
We're putting Beast
Fine,
in.
This other guy's writing the Beast episodes. Fine. I'm just going to do a short version of the thing I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Oh, and the actress who plays Koyomi is not showing up. Then I'll write around it. I will give him this. This is the thing I will give to Wizard. A part of me is you probably should have worked around the fact that they wanted to make changes. I feel like a more professional writer would have done it. But after Hibiki, it's just, no, I don't feel like it. Fine. But I feel like in the end the product was, I enjoyed Wizard.
It was reasonable, I think, is the kind of...
I love
Wizard. If you're going to rate it out of 10, you'd probably put it at maybe a 6, I would say. Maybe a 7.
I would personally give it an 8.
Oh, okay. I would probably say 6.
I love a lot of the themes in Wizard. I love a lot of the characters in Wizard. Wizard does a lot of things that I think are very important.
One of my biggest problems with Wizard was Haruto. I think he...
Really?
He seemed too perfect. I don't know, there was something... I don't know, it just kind of, he didn't, I don't know, he didn't fail enough. I don't know, there was something about him where I was like, I don't know. I haven't seen a whole lot of Wizard. I've seen about the first, third. So I kind of,
okay.
Maybe I'm talking wrong, but
Well, here's the thing, you're going off what you've seen, and again, I talk a lot about craft failures, and if they can't get you in during
I don't think it's that I couldn't get in, I think it was just that, I think Wizard was the time when I must have picked up 8 Rider shows at once, and I went, I can totally watch all these, and then crashed and burned very quickly. So, I started jettisoning them very, very fast at that point, and kind of cut down to about 2. So that was the kind of, and unfortunately that was why I missed some of the ones I did, but I kind of failed in that respect. So I'm kind of working through one show a series, one pre-decade and one post-decade series at the same time to kind of keep it.
You are.
That's still pretty intense.
I want to start Amazon soon as a short series.
I need to do the same.
Oh, so
and then
good.
I got the first 2 episodes and then we just kept getting distracted by other things. Mm. But
I didn't know
Amazon
is
amazing.
I don't have anyone to watch.
A hell of a thing.
Showa is amazing. I'm still kind of watching the Kitsubs Kamen Rider 1, but they're coming out really slowly, so it's quite nice because you don't have to, binge watch. But they are some damn good stuff. Like, you know,
yeah.
there's serious quality in the episodes, and to be honest, I give props to the design team and the writers and everyone involved, because I feel it's very similar to 70s Doctor Who in the sense that they were kind of just doing it with no money whatsoever and trying to, and they were like, we don't care that we have virtually no money, we're going to do the best that we can with what we're given. And it's amazing because they tried really hard, and that's kind of how it has a very similar feel to 70s Doctor Who, actually, in terms of aesthetic and that kind of thing, which I like, you know, it appeals to me. But no, it's good. But yeah, either Amazon or Stronger, because Stronger's just finished being subbed by MCS, I think. Is that a, yeah,
yes,
it finished like last week,
yeah,
or something. But
yeah,
you know, so,
like last month.
Yeah, because I've got, I'm trying to think, what am I? Yeah, I've got Ryuki Forze, but then that's for the show, and then Rider One, I guess, at the moment. But then that's all going to change like tomorrow, I think, because of various things that need to happen. But no, it's cool. Like, Wizard. Sorry, we were talking about Wizard. But
yeah,
sorry, go on.
I really love Wizard. Wizard addresses a lot of things that are very important to me.
Hmm.
In the range of suicide.
Oh, okay, fair.
Because a lot of post-decade Heisei is kind of metaphors for horrible things that sometimes happen to people.
Yes, they are.
So, I mean, like, you've got Forze and Double kind of tackling drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Ooze
stuff in Double. Oh my god.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've also got, like, domestic abuse all up in Double.
Yeah.
In, like, 80 different ways. But, and then you've got, like, Ooze with greed and how much that can really ruin people. And then I kind of very quickly picked up suicide as a theme from Wizard. Because, I mean, you fall into this horrible despair and then stop existing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say,
and
it was quite a...
There's this memory of you that's left behind that then goes and hurts people, usually people that you were attached to.
Mm.
And, again, a lot of what I took from Wizard was between Haruto and Rinko, because he pulls her back from that, and then the rest of the series is him kind of coping with his own depression, his own coming very close to falling into this, and a lot of it is her pulling him back out.
See, he really didn't strike me that way. I don't know. I don't know. He just.
It becomes more obvious the further you get.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, within the first, like, third of the series, that's not quite as apparent with him, because a lot of it is him being like, a lot of it is him masking his own feelings, because he has to be the writer. There is, before Beast shows up, there is literally no one else that can do this.
Yeah.
And he it's not so much that he's burdened with it, it's that he burdens himself with it.
Mm. Yeah,
as you move forward, what he's doing becomes more and more apparent.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
I do agree that there are a lot of times where he's like, he is kind of this perfect figure, and I would like to see it put into the narrative more that he is feeling these things. But Shunya, who played him, did a really great job, as the series progressed, kind of expressing it visually.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. I just haven't got around to watching it yet, so it's like, it's definitely going to be on the list of things to watch, but I think potentially O's first, and then that, just because of, you know, ordering a thing. I mean, I still haven't seen all of Double yet, like, it's just, I don't know, there's just so much to see, and I'm like, I want to watch everything
and
now.
Double, I think, shares a lot of the same, you know, we talk about pacing problems in Forza,
mm.
And it shares a lot of the same pacing problems as does Forza, as does Double, as does Drive.
Yeah.
And
is
like,
that like,
feel
post-decade
like,
Heisei
is
terrible.
Is that like a symptom of post-decade Heisei? Is that like a thing we keep seeing there?
Well,
like
it's hard.
The thing is that I think there's some really awkward pacing in Double that I don't think is as bad as everywhere else, but pretty much until Gaim, everything is building on Double, because Double did really, really well.
In terms of ratings or toy sales, or just it just went both. Over really well. Is that the kind of yes. yeah?
Like I think Double just in general did really well for them.
Did it go over as well as Deno? Because that like.
No.
Nothing went over.
Nothing went over as well as Deno.
That literally drove a train through everybody's like. Double
did get two Returns movies, so yeah, that says that something. Says
yeah, that often.
We got that. Eternal. We got an Eternal movie, which is I think actually just I can't remember his name at the moment.
The pop star guy.
Yeah, I think that he just really liked Eternal and wanted to do a movie.
Which you know,
he self-financed it just to make the movie.
Look, here's the thing. If I had like a whole ton of money, and I could be a Kamen Rider, yeah.
If I had a whole bunch of money, I would license all of the Rider series in Britain to annoy you Yanks. But you know, like, at the end,
Well, here's the thing. If it's region locked in Britain, region 2, Sweden, where I live. Is in that same region.
Well, do you know the really funny thing about DVD region? Sorry, this is going to be me hanging out from a nerd. Japan is actually region 2 for DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you buy DVDs in Japan, you can actually play them on ones in Europe, and it's fine.
Oh, brilliant.
But it's just like... But Blu-ray is not. On. It's not for Blu-ray. Blu-ray is different, which is a pain. But yeah, like I just sorry. I'm a complete geek on like formats and video standards and stuff because, you know, like it's fun. It's
fascinating stuff.
Because this is, I was talking with a friend about why Hibiki would never get a Blu-ray release, which saddens me greatly. But because it's the only like, because the only good quality like, even the Raws aren't amazing quality because they're all DVDs, especially when a lot of the camera shots are treated with post filters and stuff, like it's hard to get a clean transfer from that. So, and I love the idea Hibiki was done on film, but it isn't, so I have to keep reminding...
Well, they sure tried to make it look like...
Yeah, no, I know, but I have to keep reminding myself that it's not, that. You know, it's not. But that's... We were talking about why that wouldn't happen, and we just got into this really weird conversation about video formats and why that doesn't help matters and stuff. And also, like, why some of the Showa stuff looks so bad, when actually it probably isn't as bad as it... Not that it looks bad, it just... The quality of the video is not what it could be, because a lot of it was probably done on film.
Well, and even if you get it nice and cleaned up now, there's a lot of stuff they didn't have to really pay attention to. Like, I've often wondered if, for instance, Stronger, like, I know everyone can see the eye holes in the giant eyes, but, like, amazing. I think about how that looked in broadcast, like...
Probably didn't see them. Yeah, pretty... probably watching it on a screen that was, like, what, a few inches, like...
Well, you know, however big the screen was, I mean, it's not like the they were having high def at the time.
No.
Like you're going pure analog signals.
Yeah, exactly. So it's, the air. Exactly.
See. Like maybe the guys who live directly adjacent to the TV station's antenna could get it and be like, "Man, he's got all those weird little dots all over. What's up with that?" But everyone else is probably like, "Ah, well."
It just looks that way. Yeah.
Bug eyes.
Yep, giant bug eyes. And, you know, it works.
It's it kind of interests me, especially when they do Rider Blu-ray releases, that some of them, like, they haven't got the source material to do it, technically. The Fives Blu-ray releases are pointless, completely pointless, because Fives was done on videotape. So, like, you're basically just trying to make money. You're not actually giving us any more quality. It's like,
Well, this is Toei.
Don't even start with it. Their prices on, especially on optical media, is like just insane.
It wouldn't be as bad if they didn't refuse to actually spend money on anything.
That's the problem. Is you get this thing where they're like, you know, they charge so much for this stuff, and I can't believe that it gets lost in distributors and all that kind of stuff. I can't believe that. Like, they must make a lot of money out of this stuff. And then they're like, oh, but we can't afford to pay actual writers, or, you know, we can't afford to do this. And I'm just like, why? Where's this money going? Like, do you have terrible accountants? Like, are they just, you know, is, like, someone embezzling all this? Like, just, you know, what's going on?
I will say this. I mean, I would totally believe that Hollywood accounting happens everywhere that isn't Hollywood.
Oh, no, like,
But it's like, I'm pretty sure Toei knows what they're doing.
Mm. Well, it kind of...
They just hate spending money.
This is the thing that I also find odd, is that they won't take any risks on anything. It's kind of like every year they're expecting the Rider series to... It's like every year they're kind of expecting the new series of Rider to pay all of their bills for the next year. It's like they're betting the farm every single year. And I'm like, surely it isn't the case. You can't...
Yeah. If they were betting the farm every single year...
It's a stupid business model, like, yeah.
Well, one, it's a stupid business model, and two, like, I feel like they should playtest things. Like, I feel like they should actually do some research or get a writer in who can do more stuff. Like, bring back in Aikawa, or...
God, please.
Yeah, Sho Aikawa.
Please bring back Sho Aikawa.
Get in... You know, let's have another
Kobayashi
run.
They do still have Aikawa on staff.
Yeah, but
he's
not the head writer, so I don't...
No, but, I mean, he's still there. They're having him write episodes. So I keep hoping that they're going to give him something. And, like, I'd love for them to give him more than one half of a writer series at a time. Mm.
Yeah, some of Toei's creative decisions make no sense when you sit down and... think about it. Like, I don't...
Well, I'm sure a lot of it is probably based in the old superhero comic, the monthly superhero comics thing of, can they get the work in on time, every time? Yes, they're hired.
Mm.
But it's really terrible work. But it's always there.
Yeah. Like, reliability is better than quality. Yeah, that's an interesting... Well, I can kind of understand why. If you've got to get a product out the door, you've got to get a product out the door. There's no, you know, yeah. You can't argue with that, really.
Because, like, I have been very much banging the drum for, you know, look, just let Ryder die for a little, bring it back for revival, and have that revival be the most daring, excellent, pure soul of Ryder thing, to the point where there might not ever need to be another Kamen Rider. That's what every Kamen Rider should be. Every Kamen Rider should be Kuga. Insofar as, we don't think we're going to get to do this ever again.
Mm.
So we're going to go balls to the wall. We're just going to go nuts with this thing. We're going to tell a story, we're going to be brave with it, and anything that happens after, we'll be playing catch-up. And... look, not for nothing, I love a lot of the Heisei series. I like a lot of the post-decade stuff. Everything is still trying to catch up with Kuga, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
Well, to be honest, I feel the same way about Doctor Who, like, in the same way. Like, you know, Kuga redefines Kamen Rider in a way that is completely faithful to what has already happened, but also gives it this completely new lease of life, and so... it's the watermark by which everything else will be measured. And of course, Law of Diminishing Returns means nothing will measure up to that unless it's new. Well,
unless you do something new.
Exactly. And so you're always trying to hit this thing that you're never going to hit at. And I'm like, you've got to try something different if you're going to try and get there. That's how it...
And I mean, a lot of Heisei did do that. Heisei played with a lot of things.
They did.
You can't, like... I can basically put all of post-decade Heisei into a framework, other than Gaim, because I don't know what Gaim was trying to do.
Which, again, credit where it's due, they were trying something different, it's just that different is not always good.
Yeah, they tried something different, but they tried like 20 different things in one show.
It's not successive refinement, it's like throw the kitchen sink at it.
I mean, well, no, Gaim didn't try something different. Gaim just tried something different than the rest of post-decade Heisei.
Yeah.
All Gaim was trying to be was like the Agito to Fize era of pre-decade Heisei.
Odds, yeah.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
So,
well, basically just Ryuki with different
characters. Basically Ryuki and Fize. It was basically trying to be like Ryuki but with Smart Brain. Which is a terrible idea. Smart Brain was awful.
It had potential to be something interesting.
Smart Brain was good within the context of Fize, but it really takes work to apply that somewhere else.
It
would not work applied to Ryuki.
No, it wouldn't. It needed to be more like the Brotherhood of Mutants in X-Men than anything else, I think.
Mm.
That was my, like, that's what it needed to be. I don't know, Fives is just a confusing mess. Like, to even try and begin analysing it, you have to, like, sit down and be like, okay, so if we ignore all this stuff, then we've got something we can talk about, but it's just a mess other than that.
I mean, if you take all of Kuga to Decade, they're all very, aside from Agito being an actual extension of Kuga.
Oh.
Mm. But it just seemed new with it.
They're all very, very different.
It,
yeah, no, it was still a very different show. And then you move into Ryuki, which just like, oh, well, no, we're going to kick this entire contest out the window and go in a completely crazy new direction.
Which is still connected, I thought, to the original
Everything was still very much, this is a rider.
Yeah.
This is the kind of rider we're trying to present. But we're going to do it in completely different ways.
Well, it was almost what's cool about Ryuki is that they kind of take it and they're like, okay, so one person has this concept of a rider, but what if all these other people had slightly different concepts? How would they play that out? It's like it's taking the rider and democratizing it out to almost anybody, or at least a much broader subset of people, and seeing how they would take being a hero. And that's what makes it interesting, because you're kind of broadening this concept out.
Well, I mean, that comes down, I mean, that in a lot of ways, I thought it kind of draws back on Kamen Rider 1 and the Shocker Riders.
Mm.
Because that's basically what all the other characters, not all of them, but many of the other characters, the antagonist characters, basically were. They're the same people with the same power, but they become monstrous not because they are in and of themselves monsters or inhuman in some way, but because humanity is contains multitudes, and many of those multitudes are frightening.
Mm. Yeah.
And I mean, like, you can pick basically any two Kuga to Decade riders, and they will be very different shows.
Yep. Yeah. They all have a unique feel, but yeah, they all feel part of a construct somehow.
Yes.
Yes.
There's a uniformity, but also a distinction.
Fize and Kiva, not even remotely the same, but still have this very similar monsters trying to exist in human society, and then there are a bunch of bad apples screwing it up, and you've got that unity, but you wouldn't just look at those two stories and think they're the same.
No, you wouldn't.
And I think that a lot of that comes from Kuga to Decade Heisei, playing with the idea of who can be a hero.
Which has kind of been squandered in post-Decade stuff, because it's mostly Chosen One type stuff going on now, really.
It's all very much the same kind of guy.
Yeah, it's true. Very true.
And I think you're not, like, much as I want to resist and say, no, not Forza. Yeah, kind of Forza. It's there.
I like the idea that Forza could be anybody, but it can't be anybody.
You're glad.
Like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, you know,
the thing is, like,
if it was Kengo, it wouldn't work. That's the basic tenet of it. You know,
anyone can use the belt, but really only Gentaro could have been Forza and done what he did.
Mm. Yeah,
it's yeah.
And the thing is, Gentaro wasn't really the chosen one. Kengo was.
That's true.
Kengo was always in that chosen one thing, and they really played with that in Forza.
Yeah. I like that in a really interesting way.
Especially because
of things like he's the one who gets him to have Cosmic State. He's the catalyst for the invocation of Cosmic States and that kind of thing. It's like it really kind of brings it back to him a lot, more so than in other series. But no, I like. Yeah, I know what you mean. They are kind of similar guys as you go through most of post-Decade Heisei. Although I don't know, because Shinosuke. He seems quite different, though. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Shinosuke is very much like Haruto.
Oh, okay. So I haven't seen Wizard, so yeah. Like, yeah. That would be...
I'm seeing a lot of the same sort of person as who Haruto ended up being in who Shinosuke is now. Whereas when we started Wizard, Haruto seems very much...
He was in a place
like
and then...
previous... Yeah, it's... Again, we're... Post-Decade Heisei very much builds upon what came before it.
Which in a sense is good, I guess. I don't know, I do wonder if we're going to come to... Are we going to come to some other big event? Like, is there going to be some big event that redefines Ryder again? I don't know, like...
Well, I think a lot of the problem there is that, like, in a lot of ways I feel like decades capping off of the first 10 years of the Heisei era, and, you know, something new starting out of that, almost seems like an accident.
I was going to say, like, this is the thing that I wonder, like, was that, is this distinction that we place upon it in the kind of post-decade, pre-decade thing, is that what was intended by the writers of Decade, or when they came up with the concept of Decade, and was Double supposed to be something new? Did they deliberately go out with that idea, or was it just an accident?
Double, I think, was very much supposed to be something new, because they had started, like, pre-production on Double before Decade started airing.
Yeah.
But I think the reason we do that with Decade is also the reason that we do that with Gokaiger, in that it's this very blatant anniversary series that is capping off a specific group of shows. It is directly calling to these specific things that came before it, and nothing that comes after it can ever be part of that.
Yeah, that's...
Because it didn't exist then.
That's true, but I wouldn't place as much distinction on, like, post-Gokaiger Sentai as I do on post-Decade Kamen Rider. I don't know, there's something...
I think that's because...
There's some...
Kamen, like, Sentai never died.
No, that's true.
Like, Ryder... I mean, and... I love Ryder. Ryder died. And
yeah, but, like...
came back.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, also, there are also other real anniversary series in Sentai before that, and you don't really divide it up between them.
No, it's true.
But you do have Gowranger versus Super Sentai and Bokenger versus Super Sentai, making it very clear that these are anniversary shows.
Mm.
But I feel like Gokaiger calls very specifically to... We are making a direct connection to everyone who came before us, and there is kind of the direct connection to GoBusters with GoBusters versus Gokaiger, which is an excellent movie.
I wouldn't go as far as excellent.
Maybe not the whole movie, but there are very specific scenes in that movie that I think are brilliant.
Like when they all walk out and they're dressed as sexy pirates, and it's amazing.
No, not... Well, yes, that.
That happens.
Specifically how they use Shinkenger in that movie.
Yes.
I thought was absolutely brilliant, and that's... I like, elevate the whole movie because of that. But, it's, like, Kyoryuger and Tokyuger can never be part of what's included in Gokaiger.
No, that's true.
And I do feel like we've been taking very specific directions since the end of Gokaiger. It's just that we haven't had quite as much time yet.
Well, it's also the direction is... Like, I feel like Sentai, by its nature, has very certain things it has to be.
Mm.
Where yeah, Ryder's they're... identity is a lot more diffuse because all it's really about is, you know, the outsider takes power and does battle against the forces of oppression.
Yeah, there's a lot more of a Sentai template, in inverted commas, than there is of a Ryder template, I guess. Like,
yeah, I mean, people have had a lot to say about the post-decade, the overall plot skeleton.
Mm.
I've had a lot to say about that because the whole Double to Wizard block is literally the same show 4 times.
Well, it's the same skeleton, but
yeah,
it's very different meat.
Yeah. I mean, you're building very different shows on what is generally what they do with Sentai. They're taking a very specific framework
and putting new characters
and building,
into it. Like...
And building a new idea on top of it. And I don't think that works as well with Ryder. Because you can't have as many people. You can't quite as easily play with the dynamics.
Mm. Or it's harder with just one person and a supporting cast who are not directly involved in the monster fights.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's the...
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, we've been playing... In Sentai, we've been playing a lot with the roles of what a green Sentai hero is and what a blue Sentai hero is in the past 3 years. Mm. They've very much changed the archetype, which is refreshing. I love what they've been doing with that in the past couple of years. Mm. We've had 3 fantastic blues in a row, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's... I think in Rider that's much harder, and I think kind of bringing this around, I think that's why Sanjo is much more suited to Rider than to Sentai, because I think Sentai is too many people for him to handle.
Yeah, but he keeps trying. He keeps trying.
He gave it his best shot in Kyoryuger.
No, is he trying with giant casts?
But Kyoryuger was basically Daigo.
He still keeps trying with giant casts in Rider as well, and it just doesn't work.
Well, Double had a very small cast.
Yeah, but they had a lot of extraneous people.
Yes, but you didn't expect those people to become anything.
Well, then compared to Drive is like there's a massive, as you pointed out, there's a massive protagonist cast.
Yeah,
and they're just not.
If you take the Special Crimes Unit and compare them to the informants in Double, you never expected, like, Watcherman and Santa and Queen and Elizabeth to have story arcs.
That's true.
And they didn't, because
they didn't need
them. They were just there as actual supporting cast to support the narrative and provide exposition and further the plot. And that's all they needed to do. Where you've got the Special Crimes Unit coming in and being actual characters, and you need them to develop because that's what you do with a crime unit in a crime show.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it does, though. It makes total sense. I mean, I don't know, I wonder how that's going to play into Ninja at some point. We haven't really talked about that yet, actually. No one has really spoken much about it.
I don't think we've really discussed Ninja at all.
Are you guys excited? I'm
very hyped. I like the suits a lot.
I like the catalog. From the catalog scans I'm seeing, the aesthetic is good. Like, I think there's definitely something in this, I think. But
I generally hold off whatever my real first impressions are until I've got a writer announcement at this point.
Because
usually once we get a writer, you can kind of tell what the tone of the show will
be. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Hey, maybe the ninja will be Urobuchi's Sentai.
Don't hurt me that way.
Sorry.
Why would you say that?
I loved it when Takuji and Gaim were both airing at the same time, because it was kind of like, here's everything right with Tokusatsu. Look at Takuji. Here is everything right with it. Look at Gaim. What a mess.
The beautiful irony, my favorite part of Takuji airing with Gaim was that Takuji is a Kobayashi series.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
And Urobuchi, with his huge love of Ryuki and wanting to remake Ryuki, and I just want to imagine Kobayashi sitting over there like, you're doing it wrong.
Well, because
did you watch Ryuki
again? Yeah,
there's a thing.
He's
did you watch this show that I made
again? You know, you listen to him talk about his Urobuchi talk about his writing process. He's a guy who understood the form, but he doesn't understand why it works. He doesn't understand the mechanism. He doesn't understand the function. Like, the violence is not the important part. The bleakness is not the important part. The important part is
hope.
This other thing.
Like, what's amazing about Ryuki is there's very little actual
Kamen
Rider
going
on. It's all shoved into the last 5 minutes of the episode.
Most of it continues
into, like, the first minute of the next episode.
Most of it is just, like, Shinji going to the spa, Shinji serving tea, Ren
Kitooka
doing
being
random
a
thing.
Jerk.
Kitooka, yeah. Oh, Kitooka. Man, what a guy. But
that's one way to put it.
Yui's mother, Yui's aunt turning up randomly. Like, there's lots, you know, Shinji being a journalist, like, living his life. That's most of the show.
I always forget that Ori Journal was part of Ryuki. I consistently forget that Ryuki is where Ori Journal happened.
What's the name of the girl who who sits on her Mac all day. I can't remember what her name is.
Oh, I forget too, but she's great.
It begins with an S.
Yeah,
and she's amazing.
She's so funny. Like,
and I believe she was also Smart Lady.
Oh, she what? Oh, flipping heck, I've never noticed that. But yeah, totally.
But I can't Shimada.
Oh, yes, Shimada. Okay, yeah. No, she's
It was Shimada and Reiko.
She's wonderful. Like,
oh, yeah, no, she is easily one of the best things going on in Ryuki.
She just, oh, so much love for Ryuki. I'm so glad.
What a good show.
I'm so glad that Subvent's redoing the translations, because give me a reason to watch it properly, like, you know, actually paying attention to what's going on in the show.
Like, yeah, I need to watch shows twice because I miss things.
Yeah,
I miss a lot of small things because I'm trying to take in all this information.
This is the problem I have with Rider. Not the problem I have with Rider in general, but like, the show itself is so long, and I find rewatching things. Sometimes I find rewatching things tedious, especially if I didn't like. If you know that like the good bit starts episode 32, you have to slog through 31 episodes before you get to episode 32, and you're like, I can't bring myself to waste as much time as that, you know, when I have all this other stuff to do. But like, there are some series I would do that for. Forza, I would do that for. I've watched Forza so many times, yeah. Like, it's so worth it. But like,
I've watched it three times. This one will be number four.
I think
for the show.
I've watched parts of it so many times, it's hard to say, like, how many times I've watched the whole thing overall, but, like, yeah, it's... But, you know, that's worth it, but then, like, for some things I'm just like, I've seen this now, that's that. I don't need to, you know, I don't need to see this again, kind of thing.
Like, I really need to watch Deno again, because I think I will understand the end of Deno if I watch it again. I need to figure out the whole... I don't understand the whole scene with Irie in the boat.
Oh no!
I understand
the problem with Deno is that they can't seem to make their mind up about how time travel works. They have a very strange sense of how the future makes sense in Deno.
See, the thing for me is I when it comes to the mechanics of really any Kobayashi series, I throw logic out the window.
Yeah.
It's not a mathematical.
No,
I understand
structure.
I understand the time travel.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying the
but
thing...
But I just don't understand, like, I can't figure out what Irie knows at the end of Deno.
Yeah. The thing...
And
I didn't,
that drives me nuts.
The thing about Deno that kind of, I don't know, it gets to me because I want to work all the stuff out in a kind of very logical and process way, is that people's memories are more important than causality, which kind of annoys me in some senses, but I'm like, that's kind of what the show is about in some ways.
Yep.
It's like, you know, I'm like, oh, come on, guys. But no, I mean, no, Deno is great. Like, I probably should watch it again, but like, I've watched everything to do with Deno when I watched it the first time. Like, I watched all the movies and everything, so
yeah.
It's like, you know.
I have not watched most of the Deno movies. I have watched the mid-series movie.
Have you seen
Sarabeh? And I've watched Episode Red.
Okay, no. Sarabeh Deno is worth watching, I think. It's
Is that the ending movie?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got 10 minutes into that and I couldn't do it.
Oh. Is that the one? No. Is it that one or Climax Deca that has Hana with a rocket launcher?
No, that's Climax Deca, and Climax Deca I have watched and is amazing.
Climax Deca is just kind of like... It's just...
Climax Deca was just them having fun.
Yeah, like, I was...
They were just having fun with the construct of Deno.
I was expecting a plot, and I kind of didn't get any.
No, you didn't.
That was your mistake.
I was like, sometimes I do go into, like, the certain Rider movies where I'm like, okay, I turned up here and I wanted... I came here to have some plot and see some Kamen Riding, and I finished all my Kamen Riding, and it's kind of like... And it's just like, is the plot going to happen? No, the movie's over. Oh, okay. No. That was not the kind of movie I was expecting. But I don't know.
Climax Deca was a fun movie.
But, like, the thing I don't understand is, what was the point of Kiva being in it? Like, I don't understand any of why Kiva was
showed up.
To introduce some Kiva stuff? I don't know when Climax Deca aired in relation to Kiva.
I can't remember either.
Well, I honestly, like, I get the impression, because I have been told... that Kobayashi and Inoue are actually very good friends, and
I like the idea of them eating ramen together.
Yeah, well, there's... Well, I mean, you know, Kobayashi got her first writing gig doing an episode of Agito.
Of Agito.
It was the episode with the kid. Is it?
No, it's the episode with the kid. The kid who hangs out with Gills, who runs away and starts hanging out with Gills.
Oh, yeah, that episode.
It's that... I sat down and I want to see Kobayashi's episode of Agito, and I start watching the episode, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a Kobayashi episode of a show.
Yeah, so, and then apparently Ryuki happened, and he was very impressed, and then when she went and did Deno, he was absurdly impressed, and you can see the call and response with Deno all throughout Kiva, really.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just a lot of that.
And I'm under the impression, just from watching the movie, like, in a way, just looked at Kobayashi and said, right, we gotta do a crossover movie, but, You just want to have a big crazy Deno party?
You want to do the Deno thing? We can just have Seto Koji just walk in a couple times.
Yeah,
he doesn't really need to do anything.
Hey, there's this Kiva thing.
Which
we don't care.
Sad, right? Because he's an amazing actor.
And then there's the entire Kiva movie.
King of Hell's Castle.
I haven't watched that.
King of Hell's Castle. The first third of it is chock full of callbacks and puns and jokes about Deno.
Ah, see, now I want to watch it.
There's, like, there is the greatest Ore Sanju joke, bar none. The best one that was not when he shows up in one of the crossover movies, and it's like, Ore Sanju, hey, you're in my way! Swack, and he slaps a shocker mook out. Ore Sanju. Dang, I'm cool. I'm like, yeah, that's...
Momotaro is going to be the end of me.
Oh, man. I was always more of a Ryotaro's fan myself.
Oh, no, Kintaros is where my heart lays. I'm all on the Kintaros train.
But Urataros, though, like, his sacrifice in, like, episode 40, whatever it was, like, right near the end, I was like, man, what a turtle. What a guy.
Yeah.
Like he can romance me any day of the week. Like, I know that I'm a guy, I don't care. He is that charming.
That would not stop him. I do not think that would stop him.
He is that charming. Like, I would happily be taken out to dinner by him. And he wouldn't call me, and it would be totally fine. Like, that's how charming he would be. Oh, dear. Oh, Urataros, man. But he was my least favorite Imogen until right near the end, and I kind of got this new respect for him after a while. I was like, yeah.
They really don't do as much with him as they could have.
No, he is a bit neglected.
He's of the group, he's really the most underutilized, like, including Sieg. I'm glad they didn't use Sieg more than they did.
Yeah, because that would have been too much.
It was the perfect amount of Sieg. But they still kind of do more with Sieg than they do with Urataros throughout the entire series.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, yeah, it's...
It's sad.
Because Ryotaros gets an awful lot of stuff to do. Kintaros gets quite a lot. And Momotaros has that whole scene in the final episode.
Kintaros is basically, like, all... Momotaros is basically just all of Ryotaro's development. Mm. And Kintaros is basically all of Hana's development.
Yeah,
see,
true,
now,
yeah.
I took that rather differently, because, like, my whole understanding of the series is that it's all basically a metaphor for Ryotaro himself going through all of these different identities as he tries to grow up and synthesize a personality, which is why when he shows up in his Denliner form that is, you know, that is his own, with the aid of his friends, like, that moment blew my socks off, because it's like... Oh, you finally did it, kid. You got a personality that's all your own. And, like, that sounds like a burn. That's not.
That is very much
what Deno is kind of Ryotaro trying to discover himself.
You know, and you know, he goes through the bon vivant, he goes through the ladies' man, and he's not very good at that, so we don't spend a lot of time with Urataros. And he goes to the stoic, and he's not very good at that. Mm. And he keeps trying to regress to a child, and that's why he turns into Ryuta. And it's so good!
And I think a lot of him very much... I think if you run with that metaphor... Him regressing to a child and being very dependent on Iri, being very dependent on his life with Iri, is why Ryuta came from him.
Yeah, exactly.
Directly.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very interesting take on that. I mean, and I very much agree with the Imogen being that metaphor for him. But again, Kintaros is Hana's entire character development.
I kind of took it in a slightly different way again, I guess, in some sense. It's like it was all about growing up for me, but it was all about, in some ways, it was kind of him. It was him synthesizing a personality to become equal to Momotaros in some strange way. Because it's that final scene where they're like, when they go off to fight the final battle together, they're like, it's like they finally respect each other as people who have grown and developed and have got their own personalities and have kind of developed themselves. Yeah. It's like, yeah. It's all about growing up, but they all kind of grow with each other in some way. It's about a community rather than it being just about Ryotaro, to me anyway.
I like that. Yeah, I can roll with that.
I find the idea of, not necessarily the idea of family, but the idea of community in some way is a very, very, very Kamen Rider like idea. And
they really have, and
the idea of growing as a community as much as you, and how it impacts your growth as an individual is a very, very Kamen Rider thing to focus on. And I love that because that's an amazing metaphor. And I think people would do well to listen to that a lot.
I do too. Yes. Well, especially since I often feel that we don't get enough of it in a lot of Western media.
No, there's a lot of individualism that comes out of it, out of shows. Like,
there's a healthy level of individualism, and then there's the neurotic level of individualism, which is where I feel a lot of it kind of gets to. With a possible
exception. It's very much
like
the two different cultures.
Yeah, it is. Because
Western culture is very much about the individual, about creating an individual identity.
Mm.
Where
Japan is about the community.
Japanese culture
isn't it?
Yeah. is very much about the community, contributing to each other, and not so much the individual.
Mm.
And thinking about Gaim and how Gaim was set up to be very counterculture, I'm wondering if they were like, we can't do that.
Well, like, if. Like, I think that is the kindest thing you could say about it. Like, there was a bunch of stuff they thought they could do. They couldn't.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, I will never really have any good opinions of
that. No, and that's fine. That's totally cool.
I tried.
Cool. Like, if I started watching Wizard and totally hated it, then, you know, that's, I could, you know, it's probably another possibility. That's cool, you know.
That's perfectly acceptable.
Like, you know, but the internet doesn't seem to think that. But I love that kind of the idea of the community being so important because it just speaks of something kind of really primal and in a sense something I want children and young people to really understand and know that's how you derive meaning and a sense of something that makes any kind of sense because they have a community within which to grow rather than because they have to grow within themselves. I prefer the first option.
Especially since, you know, having a grounding and a sense of community is that gives you a good place from which to define yourself.
Yes.
Because if you start defining yourself without the necessary context of your greater community, you're just gonna, you know, you turn inwards, turn navel-gazy, and the weird, toxic echo chambers start up with all the people who all think the same things, but they're all such crazy individuals.
And you also end up reinventing, like, and it also kind of speaks of the wisdom of others in a way that's very positive, because it's not about it's not that they've gone before you and done it so you don't have to and feel disempowered. It's they've gone ahead and done it for you so that you can grow from them onwards.
You can see how they've done right, done wrong, whatever. Mm. They've done things and you can learn from them, not because they, like you say, not because they know better than you, but because they've been there.
Mm.
And, you know, again, that's not a thing you can, there are a lot of things you can't really tell some people. Or some experiences you can't explain. Like, you know, look, the first time you break up, it's going to suck.
Mm.
And
but that,
then
but that doesn't really cover the enormity
of,
gonna
be,
you know.
Is going to be, yeah, because there's no way.
No, there are no words that can describe that, no.
Because like, there's no meaningful context. But what, like you're saying, what Ryder does for a lot of life is give meaningful context, because, you know, a lot of the shows is like, oh yeah, Ryotaro went through that.
Mm.
Yeah, didn't Momo have something to say about that?
Yeah, or like in Force, I mean, even like, I don't know, I love, this is why at the moment, like with this Hibiki, this is happening with me all the time at the moment. It's like, because I'm...
Yeah. Well, that's literally what Hibiki's
exactly,
about.
Because like, at the moment, I'm like, some math stuff I have to do is really, really hard, and like, I'm really worried about the exams and stuff, and like, I watch Hibiki, and it's like, well, if you're not good enough, just train harder. And then watching Hibiki like bench pressing 500-pound rocks, and I'm just like, and I'm struggling with this, man. My life is small by comparison. So I feel like Asamu. I feel a lot of the time I'm like, it's like that. And I love how in Hibiki they offset his, in inverted commas, petty things of his life with Hibiki's like really massive problems, but actually they present them in a way that is equitable. And so Asamu having appendicitis is presented in exactly the same way as Hibiki fighting the Berserk Doji. And it's like, these things are exactly the same in terms of their dramatic weight, which is something I love about the show.
It's beautiful. And yeah, like,
I mean, Kiva. Great. Kiva is very much in Wataru specifically. I don't know so much about the rest of Kiva.
the hell do you know about Wataru?
But Wataru specifically is... He doesn't want to be this hero. He legitimately just doesn't want anything. He wants everyone to leave him alone.
Just let him...
He just wants to sit in his house...
And make violins.
And make a violin. And that's it. That's all he wants out of life. But never once... Does he balk away from being Kiba?
No.
Well, yeah, because there's...
He's, no matter what his problems are, no matter how afraid he is, he always gets up and does it, because someone's got to do it. This is my responsibility.
And then he meets all those nice people, and he makes friends, and he... reaches out and has community, and I'm weeping on the couch going, my precious baby! I don't even like, you know, that's not even a thing I say, but it's like, I watch that show and I'm like, no! It's a bad world!
My
son! Ah.
It's like, don't touch my son! Leave him alone! Just let him make his violins!
But he becomes so much more than just a violin maker.
No, he does. Like, he grows into so much, and he overcomes so much of what's holding him down.
Including himself.
And,
yes.
Yeah, and it's amazing. And this, because he always has support. There's never a time in Kiva where Wataru doesn't have support. It's not always from the same people. There are people that turn away from him. But he always has someone, but he never actually believes, like, there's someone supporting him.
No, he does.
It's always very much, if something goes wrong, it's his fault. It's not our fault, it's not something we all need to fix, it's my fault, I screwed it up for everyone.
Mm.
And he kind of learns that it's okay to let everyone else shoulder things with him. Not that he should just let them take over everything, but that they're there to support him. They will help him, no matter how badly he screws up.
Mm.
And there's a scene very early on, and I will always come back to this scene when I talk about Kiva. And it's not even within anything with context to the plot.
Is it the violin concert? After the violin concert?
He's forced to throw this small violin concert in his house by Shizuka. She sets it up, even though he says not to. He doesn't want to do it, but she thinks it will help him, and she sets it up, and he gets nervous, and he screws the whole thing up, and it's our hero, our protagonist Kamen Rider, crying on the floor. And it's never painted as wrong. He's never treated as wrong for having done that. Like, she's like, it's okay.
Mm.
We'll clean everything up. You tried.
Yep.
You did your best. And I think that's a really important thing to show kids.
Mm.
especially young boys, especially with the very strict gender binary in Japan.
Yes, that's true.
Though, I, you know, one thing I have come to really like about the very limited things I have seen and know of Japanese culture is that while they have the very strict gender binary, there's also a lot more room to flex inside of it. Like, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, you'll see a lot of the Toku Bro set of the Western fans be like, ah, they look so skinny and pretty and gay.
Which the whole J-boy thing was a thing for quite a while. Like, I can understand, I can kind of understand why people are a bit like that. Yeah, my friend's first comment when I showed a double was, these are very effeminate men. To which I responded,
my mom once saw a picture of Eiji and Ankh, and it took me about 20 minutes to convince her that Ankh wasn't a girl. She argued with me. She had no idea who these people were. She had never seen them before.
I love parents' reactions to Tokyo in general. I just find it like that is a whole show in itself. I just find it so funny. Like, I was watching. Yeah. What was it?
I mean, my mom is generally very good about this. She has discussed a lot of Toku with me.
That's fair.
My mother,
without having watched any of it, but she's very willing to have a discussion about it.
Both my mother and my father are very aware that their adult son gets legitimately, like, I am 33 years old. Emotional about, like, I still to this day get legitimately emotional about the 1986 animated Transformers movie.
But that movie was amazing in that it was awful. Well, no,
it was terrible. But I love it and know it by heart. And, you know, like, when it's on, I can quote along. But, you know, it really is the interesting thing where, like, I know there's a lot of jokes that go around. It's like, nah, but my parents are aware that their son has a big old bookshelf full of transforming robot toys, and they're like, you either fight it or you don't.
Yeah, I mean, 2 years ago, I literally renovated my entire room so that I would have shelves to put toys on. So that I could literally cover my walls in Kamen Riders, because I had nowhere to put them. I started buying figure arts and very quickly ran out of anywhere to put them. And
I think
I had to renovate my whole room.
I think what sealed it for me, I think I was watching, Black or something? And I was watching it, like, we have, like, one TV in our house. I have, like, I watch most things on my tablet just because, and I was streaming something onto my PlayStation from my tablet to watch on my TV downstairs. And my dad just kind of walks into the room and Black's punching somebody. He just walks in, sees it, turns around and walks out again. And I was like, yeah, thanks a lot, Dad. Like,
that's, look, fair enough, that's about the right reaction.
Although, I must admit, it was really funny, because one time, me and my friend, who we cosplay together as Time Lords from Doctor Who, we won the cosplay contest at a convention once.
Oh, congratulations.
Once. And I came home and I told my parents, and I was like, should I tell them? Should they be legitimately proud that their adult son is winning costume contests? And I was like, in my head, what's the correct... I don't know. I just told them anyway. They're really happy. They're really proud. So, you know, whatever. But, I was just like, but is this a thing? I don't know. It was very, very weird. As a conversation in my head, I was having with myself. I was like, is this a legit thing that's cool? I don't know. But, like... I must admit, it is quite amusing, like, sending my Amazon wishlist to people at Christmas when it's like, what are these what are they? I don't understand. And I was like, I'm not explaining this to you. Just buy the thing. Yeah. Like... I finally convinced my uncle to buy me the G-Ranger box set as my Christmas present.
You did?
Yeah, I convinced him. So like it is, but I was like, he just didn't ask me any questions. I was like, I'm so glad that you didn't, because otherwise this would just have taken a lot longer than it should have done. But parents' reactions to Toku is is an interesting topic in itself. I'd love it if my parents were more into it, but I don't know if that would make it more weird. I don't know. It's like if like. I don't know, because, like, introducing it to my kids, like, if I ever have kids, like, I don't know, is that something I'll do? I don't know. I'd like to. I'd love to think that they'd love Forza as much as I do, but I don't know, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know.
Well, I think a lot of it's, you know, it's going to be a lot easier, I think, going forward, because superheroes have become a more accepted part of the public consciousness.
No, that's very true,
I mean, you know, with the Avengers, like, I was so happy when X-Men 2 happened. because I'm over at my mom's and we're, you know, hanging out with my mom, my stepdad. X-Men 2 is on the TV. Stepdad comes in a little late. My mom's and he's like, "Okay, well, what's going on?" And she's explaining the plot. Only she's not talking about them like superheroes. She's talking about
real people
with their character names. Like, okay, so that's Scott, and this is his deal, and that's Jean, and that's her deal, and now they're fighting because they've been mind controlled by this guy. And he's just like, "Oh, okay." And you know, you can just sit down because once it's in movies and translated into a more understandable media, without a lot of the genre trappings of the comic book, well, the media trappings of the comic book or of rubber monsters suits, like, it becomes a lot easier. And not to mention, since everything has CG in it nowadays, it's also a lot lower bar for entry, because, like, the difference substantively between the monsters in Kamen Rider Black and the monsters on, I don't know, Doctor Who or Supernatural or what have you.
Yeah.
It's not much.
No, that's very true. I mean, yeah.
Like, honestly, Black is basically Supernatural in that it starts out as a horror. Every episode starts out, well, the episodes of Supernatural I've watched, every episode that I've watched starts out as a horror movie, then the heroes show up and murder the crap out of the monster.
Yeah, pretty much. Like,
that's
basically
Black.
Like, yeah,
beginning to end.
It's basically Black. Like, it's just what it is. But no, like, I just find it interesting. I wonder about strange things when I have far too much time on my hands and my brain just kind of goes off into weird places. I'm just like, will I watch Tokusha with my children? Or, like, you know, will I have, like, I'd love to think I would. I'd love that to be, like, you know, I'd love them to run around the house, like, pretending they were Wright or Togachi or whatever. You know, I think that would be awesome. But,
that,
like,
would be adorable.
Like, you know, that would be amazing. Like, I've seen the cutest Shoutro cosplay ever. This, like, little kid dressed as Shoutro. It's the best thing I've ever seen in my life. It's utterly beautiful. But, like,
have you seen the little kid's dresses driving Kirikou?
Oh, my gosh. I want to adopt him immediately. Will you fight me for them, Sailor?
Yes. Where is that picture? Just, I will grab that
It's such a beautiful picture. I can't reblog that enough on Tumblr.
But it really is the thing where you stop and, like you know, you're talking about stopping and thinking about things. Like, every now and again, I catch myself, especially now as I've seen a lot of Kamen Rider series, I'm like, oh right, I've stopped having long discussions in my head about how weird this is. Because once you start with a guy with the rocket arm and the drill leg,
you can only go up, really. I mean,
yeah, cool. Because after that, it's just like, oh, okay, all right. I just go with it now. Like, I don't even fight it. Like, because when you stop and think about, like, okay, so fruit.
Samurai.
So there's a zipper in the sky. Fruit drops down from a. Where is it dropping from? I don't know. And then it turns into armor? Why does... And it changes the visor? Does that mean it's going into his head? How does... I don't... Because, like, when you stop and think about it, it's mad.
Oh, totally. But it's awesome.
Like, the thing I really appreciate... Yeah, like you say, it's awesome. And you know, it just says, well, here we are, we're doing it. And unlike a lot of Western shows where they do spend... like 20 minutes explaining why it works.
And it never apologizes.
It's just, who cares?
But it never apologizes for being that way. It's like, it's not like they spend hours and hours in Tokusha talking about why the rainbow line works or that kind of thing. They're just like, we're just doing that. That's the thing we're doing.
Power of imagination. Like, but that's not actually what imagination is. Shut your hole. Get on the train.
No. You didn't hear me. Imagination. That's what we're doing. That's cool. That's that. Like,
you got a problem?
There you go.
You got a problem?
Then get off my train right now.
Yep. Get off the train. You ain't gonna watch it. As everyone says when you want to raise critical discussions of any TV show ever, you don't gotta watch it. Jog on.
See, but then, if you still want to have critical discussions about it after that, it's, well, you're not watching it, so you can't say anything. So, like, what are you supposed to do?
You're supposed to watch it, but not watch it. Does a tree falling in a wood make a sound? Who knows? I didn't see the tree. Whatever. Like, it's just, it's not a thing that happens. It just gets to be very weird.
I mean, we've got tiny living Hot Wheels with nuanced relationships. Okay. Okay.
We have demons made of sand that are better romancers than me. Deno in a nutshell. Like, yep. This is the thing, that when you start summarizing these shows, you know, we have a guy who transforms into an astronaut with the power of switches.
And friendship.
And friendship. Actually, yep. Yeah, I forget, yeah, and friendship is powerful.
Yeah, he uses the power of friendship to become an astronaut with a rocket for an arm and drill for a leg. Why?
Why not?
That's why.
Because actually, yeah, that guy is your face.
That dude there is half that dude and half that dude. Why does that work? Shut up.
And then we have
this is the realm of symbolism and fiction, you pedant.
And then we have Hibiki, where people transform into monsters and fight monsters with the power of music.
Yep.
I once ran yet another introductory Kamen Rider panel, but it was at a small convention, so the people showing up there actually didn't know anything about Kamen Rider.
All right.
Nice.
Oh, awesome.
But we actually convinced someone to start watching Kamen Rider by telling him, there's one show where a dude fights by playing electric guitar.
And it's true. Frigging amazing.
And it's... are not lying.
Look, here's the thing. Like, if you don't like the idea of defeating the evil power with the power of rock...
Get out.
What are you doing with your life?
Yeah. What kind of life are you leading?
Like the ultimate anime for me would be one where the teenage protagonist is surfing on the back of a giant robot while playing an electric guitar, and the electric guitar has lightning shooting off of it that makes the evil alien spaceships.
Have you ever seen the Professor Layton movie? Professor Layton in the Mystery of the Eternal Diva. That has a giant pipe organ that transforms into a giant killer robot. It's amazing.
Yeah, same. but I think a lot of it is also that the symbology, you know.
Totally.
All of these things, they mean things, and that's why a lot of the best Rider series work, because yes, they're all these bonkers ideas, but then they all have this weight to them that is hard to get away from. It's beautiful.
Well, they sit down and take things... I feel that what they do is they take something into a realm that you don't necessarily understand in order to make points about things that you do understand.
Yes.
It's like they're lulling you into the sense of security to then hit you really, really hard with something that like is a real truth. Like, Forze does that an awful lot. It's like, we're going to have this fight about these things, and then it comes back and it's like, hey, you shouldn't do that thing, and you're like, oh, hell yeah, I should think about that. Like, it does it every time. It's a classic. It's a great way of telling stories, but like, oh, it's wonderful. Like, that's why I love Rider so much. It's just, oh, it's such a great medium for exploring so many different things.
It really is. And I mean, it is the one thing that is its strength and weakness when compared to Sentai, because, again, Sentai is always about, you know, the power of friendship overcoming all obstacles. You know, there's a lot of subtle gradations, but ultimately, it's kind of Sentai.
Mm, yeah, to a degree. I think some buck the trend. Like
it, yeah. It really depends.
O-Ranger is not like that in the end.
Oh, okay.
Like O-Ranger is quite. O-Ranger is pretty dark. Like the first 10 episodes of O-Ranger are pretty dark. Like you really get the impression that like the Earth could lose. A lot.
Nice.
Like it's the O-Ranger is cool. Like what are they called? Millionfold subbing it now. Like it's worth watching. I would say.
Okay.
Abba-Ranger is really dark.
For one episode. It goes dark really quickly. You said
like there are a lot of implications of very dark things, and then they just kind of drop it all on you. They're like, yeah, all of these things we've been implying, because basically. A world literally ends.
Sweet.
You have an actual post-apocalyptic world. It's just not this one.
Oh, yeah.
And they keep kind of implying a lot about it through Abare Black. And then you hit episode, like, 32. And it's like, oh, yeah, this is all the horrible stuff that's happening.
Nice. There you
okay.
go.
Well, then I sit correctly.
Yeah, you know, they're totally like. I mean, Sentai is just there's more of it. There's like, but no, O-Ranger is cool in that respect. Like the first episode of O-Ranger is like kind of hilarious because you have all these people who are supposed to be like the best that the army cannot, like the best that they can, And, like, they get thrown into the situation with all these gear creatures and they just can't even fight them. And then O-Red turns up at the end and just kicks all their asses. And you're like, and they're like, yeah, so we suck, kind of thing.
We need
the O-Powers. That's what we need. Like, you know. It's just, it's awesome. Anyway, sorry, I'm sorry, guys, but I probably am going to have to go to bed because I've got to be awake tomorrow to revise and stuff. So as much as I've loved this conversation, I've loved the last 2 hours. It's been wonderful. Like, man. It's been great, guys. I've loved talking to you.
So much fun.
All right, then, for Uncommon Cast RX, I'm Aleph.
I'm Jonathan.
I'm Sono.
You can reach us on Twitter at UncommonRX or the show's inbox, uncommoncastrx@gmail.com, to submit any questions, suggest topics for future discussion, or just let us know how we're doing. This episode's hosts can be reached at NeedsMoreAleph for Aleph, at The Imposter for Jonathan, and at SonoYourFace for Sono. Please rate and review to raise our visibility and listen to us wherever you are by subscribing through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite RSS reader. This has been a production of the Tool Network, bringing you analysis and critique. For more, visit trialofheroes.wordpress.com.